This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. It is Monday. I hope you had a great weekend. It's not just any Monday, though. It is Columbus Day observed, and it is my pleasure, my duty, my pleasure. Did I say it already? My privilege, my pleasure, and my duty to kick off our full day of Columbus Day coverage right here on 77 WABC. We are going to be all Columbus all the time these days, today anyway. And we'll tell you about some of the highlights you'll get to hear, including some coverage live from the Columbus Day Parade. So it's going to be a great day of radio for those of you that are interested in learning about Columbus or that are interested in celebrating American culture or Italian culture or anything in that vein. Now, today is Columbus Day. Columbus, the interesting thing about him is he has always been a controversial figure. He was a controversial figure 500 years ago. He was a controversial figure in Europe and certainly in this continent. But he's been posthumously under attack a great deal for the last 30 years, but especially over the course of the last 2 years. Now, we've seen in the last 2 years alone, Columbus's statue removed from all sorts of places. Richmond, Virginia, St. Paul, Minnesota, Boston, Massachusetts, Camden, New Jersey, Atlantic City, New Jersey. They still have a street name for him, but they don't have the statue that was on the street. Houston, Texas, New London, Connecticut, Wilmington, Delaware, Columbia, South Carolina, Middletown, Connecticut, West Orange, New Jersey, Detroit, Michigan, Hartford, Connecticut, New Haven, Connecticut, Columbus, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. They have the city named for him, but they managed to take down the poor guy's statue. Now, that doesn't even include the list of places where his statue has been vandalized or decapitated. Now, in addition to the statue desecration slash removal, the other thing you have to keep in mind is this might be Columbus Day for us nationally. This might be Columbus Day for us here in New York, sort of. But it is rapidly being replaced with Indigenous Peoples Day. More and more states and cities are choosing to do one of two things, either celebrate both Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day or replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. You know what they're doing today in Oregon? Oregon today is going to be celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day for the first time. Boston this year is celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day for the first time. So is the state of Texas. It's actually Indigenous Peoples Week in the state of Texas. Texas is a little different because they didn't cancel Columbus Day. They never had Columbus Day as an official holiday. They just decided to adopt Indigenous Peoples Day. Arlington, Massachusetts, East Hampton, Massachusetts. This is this year alone. Last year, the state of Virginia, Baltimore, Maryland, Columbus, Ohio. I mean, again, I can't get over the irony of Columbus, Ohio not celebrating Columbus Day, but there you have it. Houston, Texas. That's just last year alone. Every year, I used to be able to count how many jurisdictions celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. Now, it's too many for me to count. I can't name them all. And those are just the ones that were adopted in the last 3, 4, 5 years. Now, I want to make something very clear. I am not at all opposed to the indigenous people. And I recognize that the indigenous people on this continent, American Indians, Native Americans, whatever the PC term du jour is, have suffered a great deal. And while suffering, they have been able to make a significant degree of progress across a wide variety of industry. And unfortunately, a lot of that industrial progress was slowed down because of all the indigenous people that were killed for a whole host of reasons, none of which made the people on the other side of that look very good. I've spoken with Sosheen Littlefeather. I think that was one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. If you want to search on YouTube, you can hear my interview with Sosheen Littlefeather. Of anything I've ever uploaded to YouTube, that has by far the most views of anything I've ever done. But I don't understand why the indigenous people and those who care about the indigenous people and those that really take issue with the plight of indigenous people these days, because you're seeing problems with poverty in the indigenous community. You're seeing problems with drug addiction and alcoholic addiction in the indigenous community. You're seeing problems with illiteracy. You're seeing problems with, I mentioned this at the time of the Gabby Petito situation. In that same area of the country where Gabby Petito went missing, over the last 2 years, something like 800, 900 indigenous women were either killed or have gone missing, and yet you never hear about them. So I'm all for celebrating the cause of indigenous peoples. Here's what I'm not for doing. I'm not for canceling Columbus Day and replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. I have always been an advocate of give the indigenous people their own day, let them be celebrated, give people a day off, let's learn about indigenous contributions to this continent, and let's talk about how we can celebrate the contributions of indigenous people in America today. I'm all for that. But don't do it on Columbus Day. To me, that does a few things. One, it almost cheapens the holiday. It almost makes the holiday, the fact that you have to steal it from someone else, it makes it almost count less from my view, in my view. Additionally, I think a lot of the people like me, for instance, who enjoy celebrating Columbus Day, you almost create more lingering hard feelings towards indigenous people by trying to snatch Columbus Day away and reclaim it for Indigenous Peoples Day. To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's give them their own day. I am all for that, and I would be the first online to celebrate it, to march in the Indigenous Peoples Day parade, and all the rest of that. But then the question becomes is, why should Christopher Columbus, a guy who did do many horrible things through the course of his life, and a guy who a lot of horrible things was done in his name, both in his lifetime and afterwards, why does Christopher Columbus deserve a day? The fact of the matter is, Christopher Columbus is more deserving of a day than almost any person in the world who has a holiday named for them. With the possible exception of Jesus Christ, Christopher Columbus is one of the most important figures in the history of the world. And you could count on one hand the number of people who have ever lived that have had a contribution to this world as significant as Christopher Columbus. Maybe no one has, but I don't think you can just ignore that Christopher Columbus is one of a handful of individuals who changed the world. You know, I hate to put it morbidly, but if I never existed, if somebody went back in time like the Terminator and killed my mother before she was pregnant with me, if I never existed, do you know what this world would be like? It would be almost exactly the same as it is now. It would not be different one iota, except maybe you'd have something else different to listen to from 1 to 5 a.m. But for that, the world would be exactly the same. Had Christopher Columbus never been born, the whole world would be radically different. Not only would I not be here, you wouldn't be here either. The whole world would be different. Now, how different did Christopher Columbus make the world? Now, for starters, obviously, as my less than impressive physique would indicate, I am a big fan of food. Without Christopher Columbus, before 1492 and before the Columbus voyages, because it was more than one voyage, it was about four. Before 1492, there were no oranges in Florida. There were no bananas in Ecuador. There was no paprika in Hungary. There was no tomatoes in Italy. Can you imagine that? There were no tomatoes in Italy. You try and picture Italy today without tomatoes and tomato sauce. There was no coffee in Colombia. There were no pineapples in Hawaii. There were no rubber trees in Africa. There was no chocolate in Switzerland. There were no chili peppers in Thailand, China, or India. The potato became the most important food source for the poor in Central and Northern Europe. Corn was introduced to Africa in the 16th century and replaced traditional African crops as the continent's most important staple food crops. That does not happen without Christopher Columbus. But aside from the food, this is a person who opened this continent to European colonization. I don't think you can overstate the importance of that. Before Columbus, there was very little traveling from one hemisphere to another. You stayed in your hemisphere. You did your thing for the most part. After Columbus, think of how the world has changed. And, I read a fascinating piece in the Wall Street Journal today. And the writer talks about the things that Columbus did far beyond just travel. He taught himself Latin in order to study ancient and medieval manuscripts for clues about the circumference of the globe and his prospective journeys. Now, it's true, his calculations were wildly off, and he overestimated the size of Asia, and he underestimated the size of the Earth. But he also knew that he had to make the mission sound easier, like any startup seeking venture capital. Revisionism has a vital role in history. As we discover new information and apply new insights to past events, there should be no place for whitewashing and jingoism in the service of a patriotic agenda or any agenda. We must teach the good and the bad of our leaders, our founders, our heroes, and our saints. Otherwise, myths take hold too easily. Comparing American statues of Columbus to those of Robert E. Lee fails this test of context. The call for objectivity applies also to those who would judge 15th century Europeans who took outrageous risks and performed incredible feats of exploration to advance modern civilization. Do you know who wrote that? Garry Kasparov. Garry Kasparov, the chairman of the Renew Democracy Initiative and the Human Rights Foundation, also a chess champion. It's in the Wall Street Journal opinion section today. It's brilliantly written. And he finishes with this: I will be celebrating Columbus Day, and I hope you'll join me. Well, I certainly will be. To me, the fact that Christopher Columbus's statue is coming down all over the place, and the fact that Christopher Columbus is under attack 500 years after his death, and the fact that we're trying to erase his contributions from history, to me, is a really sick and demented thing. You cannot judge people who lived in the 1490s by 21st century standards. Now, I don't know how it was when you were growing up, but when I was growing up, it would not be unusual for, let's say when my dad was growing up. When my dad was growing up, if he did something wrong, right? He talked back to his mother, came home late, broke a dish on the floor. It would not be unusual for his parents to give him a smack, a firm smack. Now, that is not long ago. That's a few decades ago. And that was considered appropriate. Now, if a parent publicly proclaims that they're going to give their kid a smack or grab a belt or a spoon, forget about it. That person would be hauled off to jail. When I was growing up, if a kid gave me a hard time at school, shoved me, pushed me, you know what my father would tell me? Punch them in the face. Punch them in the face. You try and tell that to a kid now, not only will that kid be suspended from school, but forget about it. They'll take that child away and put them in child protective services. And I mention that just to show you how much the world and the mores of the world has changed within the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Imagine how much it's changed in 500 years. So how can you judge someone who lived in the time that he lived by the standards of right and wrong that we now view as appropriate? And then lastly, well, I'm not going to say this lastly, penultimately, I think it was a great thing that after George Floyd and some other racial incidents, America became more committed to celebrating certain holidays that were representative of the black experience. Juneteenth comes most immediately to mind. I think that's great. We recognize that there's this group of people that has been historically mistreated, and we want to, one, say that we're not going to do that anymore, but two, recognize the historical oppression that that group's been under. Well, do you know how the first Columbus Day came to be in America? Do you know what year the first Columbus Day was celebrated? The first Columbus Day was celebrated in 1892, and that's for two reasons. One, it was the 400th anniversary of Columbus's journey. But the other reason was because a year before, there was the largest mass lynching of in American history of people. Those people happened to be Italian immigrants. They were killed. They were murdered, 11 of them, in New Orleans. And there was going to be a riot in this country of Italian voters. And Benjamin Harrison, the president of the time, wanted no part of that. He also had a major diplomatic crisis on his hands with the newfound country of Italy. So he inaugurated Columbus Day to help heal the wounds of that 1891 lynching. The suffering of those Italians that were lynched in 1891 is no less real than the death of George Floyd or the death of anybody else that's been killed in the name of racism or an abuse of the police state. So to all of a sudden say this gesture from President Harrison to heal those wounds by declaring Columbus Day, to say that doesn't count, it's outrageous. And it's insulting to those people that were lynched and their descendants. This is the last thing I'll say on this subject, and then I'll invite you to comment at 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. So much of Columbus Day has become a celebration of the Italian immigrant experience to America. So much of Columbus Day has become a celebration and a recognition of the assimilation of Italians into American culture and society. So much of Columbus Day has become a celebration of the historical achievements of Italian immigrants to America, not only their achievements, but the achievements of their children and their great-grandchildren. And you notice the phrase I haven't used yet. It's a two-word phrase, and I'm sure some of you are shouting at your radio, wondering why I haven't said it. The phrase that I haven't used is Italian-American. Because much like Theodore Roosevelt, who I thought gave a beautiful speech about 105 years ago today, and I may quote from it a little later, I don't care for hyphenated Americanism. I think once you're in a country and you want to enthusiastically embrace that country, that's it. That's your country. I'm not into this hyphenated Americanism any more than Theodore Roosevelt was. That being said, I'm immensely proud of my grandparents on my mother's side, my great grandparents on my father's side, coming here to this country with nothing and building an incredible life for themselves and their family. And I'm also proud of the culture in this country that everyone else who's had a similar life journey has undergone. And I'll tell you, one of the things I used to look forward to every Columbus Day on this radio station and on other radio stations was Bob Grant reading essentially an essay. Now, he didn't write this, but he read it every Columbus Day, and it was wonderful. And even though I don't particularly love the phrase, Bob Grant, whose real name, of course, was Robert Ciro Giganti, Bob Grant loved the term Italian-American. And he loved to proclaim that he was an Italian-American almost as much as he enjoyed reading this essay.
I am an Italian-American. My roots are deep in an ancient soil, drenched by the Mediterranean sun and watered by pure streams from snow-capped mountains. I am enriched by thousands of years of culture. My hands are those of the mason, the artist, the man of the soil. My thoughts have been recorded in the annals of Rome, the poetry of Virgil, the creations of Dante, and the philosophy of Benedetto Croce. From my ancient world, I first span the great seas to the new world. I am Cristoforo Colombo. I am Giovanni Caboto, known in American history as John Cabot, discoverer of the mainland of North America. I am Amerigo Vespucci, who gave my name to the new world, America. First to sail on the Great Lakes in 1679, founder of the territory that became the state of Illinois, colonizer of Louisiana and Arkansas, I am Enrico Tonti. I financed the Northwest expansion of George Rogers Clark and accompanied him through the lands that would become Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Michigan. I am Colonel Francesco Vigo. I mapped the Pacific from Mexico to Alaska and to the Philippines. I am Alessandro Malaspina. I am Giacomo Beltrami, discoverer of the source of the Mississippi River in 1823. I am Filippo Mazzei, friend of Thomas Jefferson. And my thesis on the equality of man was written into the Bill of Rights. I am William Parker, signer of the Declaration of Independence. I created the dome of the United States Capitol. They called me the Michelangelo of America. I am Constantino Brumidi. In 1904, I founded in San Francisco the Bank of Italy, now known as the Bank of America, the largest financial institution in the world. I am A.P. Giannini. I am Enrico Fermi, father of nuclear science in America. First enlisted man to win the Medal of Honor in World War II, I am John Bassalone of New Jersey. I am the million strong who served in America's armies and the tens of thousands whose names are enshrined in military cemeteries from Guadalcanal to the Rhine. I am the steelmaker in Pittsburgh, the grower in the Imperial Valley of California, the textile designer in Manhattan, the movie maker in Hollywood, the homemaker and the breadwinner in 10,000 communities. I am an American without stint or reservation, loving this land as only one who understands history, its agonies and its triumphs, can love it and serve it. I will not be told that my contribution is any less, nor my role not as worthy as that of any other American. I will stand in support of this nation's freedom and promise against all foes. My heritage has dedicated me to this nation. I am proud of my full heritage, and I shall remain worthy of it. I am an Italian American.
You're hearing WABC.
It's the other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
That is Little Richard singing Good Golly, Miss Molly. I think Little Richard was Sicilian, I believe. And Molly, of course, a valued member of our team. We'll check in with her later. She's not answering the phone right now. She is occupied with other matters. We'll check in with her later and find out what those matters are. I'm going to take your calls in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about how you can avoid getting screwed by inflation. Did you hear my conversation with John Catsimatidis this morning? He let us know. See, he's in the oil business, or not this morning, but Sunday morning. He's in the oil business and the grocery business. And he says, if you buy gasoline or buy food, you are about to pay a whole lot more. He doesn't like to call it inflation. He likes to call it having to pay a lot more for stuff. Bottom line is, that's what inflation is. So what does that mean for you if you've saved your whole life to be able to retire? And then all of a sudden, your money's not worth as much as it used to be. Well, that means you need to think about gold and other precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And the people who can help you with that are Legacy Precious Metals. If your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, it's getting eaten away right under your nose. Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and protect your retirement. So if you have an existing retirement account, roll it into a gold or a silver IRA and think about doing it with Legacy Precious Metals. This gold should be a real big part of your financial portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased counsel based on your individual situation. So contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down, 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit legacypminvestments.com. Straight to the phones we go. Let me say hello to Jenny on Staten Island. Hello, Jenny.
Hello, Frank. I want to tell you, I've been listening to you since you were with Sliwa. But tonight, and lots of times I disagree with you, but tonight you not only made yourself so proud, you made all Staten Islanders proud, and that was the most wonderful, wonderful eulogy that I heard anyone ever give. God bless you.
Wow.
Frank.
Thank you, Jenny. Don't you feel guilty for disagreeing with me previously now after that saying
such nice things? No.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Happy Columbus Day. 800-848-WABC. John is in Garden City. Hello, John.
Hey, Frank. I agree. Excellent opening. Excellent, excellent. Let me just say something here. There's a mindset with people. They just don't understand where things come from. What would the world be without Christopher Columbus, all the discoveries? This is what these people did. They traveled the world to try to find discoveries to make the world better. Sure, things happen, and you know, especially like you just said, with his past and so forth, but that went across the whole world. Even the indigenous people slaughtered themselves to land grabs. You know, we can go, if you want to get ridiculous, let's question George Floyd. You got a big statue? Let's take it down. His past is not so rosy either. You know, so people take this position, which is really outrageous at times, and I find it really disgusting at times. So I just want to say that to you. One more thing, regards to Bob Grant. He mentioned, and this is something I said to you, I posed you a question in the past. He mentioned about Philip Maese and William Pocket, the signers of the Declaration.
Right.
And you weren't aware of it.
Yeah, I wasn't. I've since become more informed of William Pocket, and I appreciate the education you gave me on that, John.
No, it's not education. So I just mutter his words.
Hey.
But again, you know, great opening. I appreciate what you did. It was a great, great thing.
Thank you very much, John.
Show.
Appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. Gary is in Rockaway. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that all Americans should try to honor each other's cultures and things that we believe in, and not put each other down.
Agreed.
Because if you know, thank you. And united we stand, divided we fall. But you know, we got to stop fighting against each other, because if another country takes us over, we're going to wish we got united instead of going against each other. And as far as Columbus, everybody has sins, and he who's without sin throw the first stone.
Well, it's a great point, Gary. And also, I'll add to that, let he or they who are without sin in 1492 throw the first stone. You know what was going on in the world in 1492? In Spain, they were in the midst of expelling or killing all of the Jews as part of the Spanish Inquisition. Now, that was the mindset of what was considered acceptable in organized society at the time. So ultimately, we're all a product of the era and the civilization in which we come from. And Columbus was no different. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
How long did it take you to write that opening statement, Frank?
Well, I mean, a lot of it, I just kind of wrote bullet points. A lot of it was extemporaneous, but I don't know, about 10 minutes.
I mean, I got to tell you, it was unbelievably, it was wonderful.
Wow,
thank you. I felt like I was in a college classroom, and the professor was actually lecturing, and I was mesmerized, Frank. It was your best since I've been listening to you.
Wow, geez. I thank you, Neil. That's I better ask for a raise.
Well, I think you deserve one, Frank. How do you like that?
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Nick in Whippany, New Jersey. Hello, Nick.
Oh, Frank, how you doing there? Yeah, I'm all for Columbus Day, and I'm really sad to hear about these statues getting knocked down and so forth. What I don't understand is you mentioned Bob Grant had a different name. His birth name was Italian.
Right. Robert Ciro Gigante was his given name. Yes.
Yeah. Why did he change it to Bob Grant? Why didn't he keep his?
I've actually asked Bob about that. And I think I have Bob on tape somewhere explaining that. But basically, and he spoke, it was a tough decision for him because he was very proud of being Italian. And so was Bob's father. And Bob had decided in his early 20s that he wanted to become an actor and then an actor and a news person on the radio. And in those days, all of the actors, essentially, you know, all of the radio people, they had very generic, non-ethnic names. So Bob called his father up in Chicago and he said, do you mind if I use Bob Grant as a stage name? And his father understood it. He said, you got to do what you got to do if you're going to be an actor and you're in that line of work. So I can assure you, though, just like Pat Cooper, whose real name was Pasquale Caputo, there's no lack of ethnic pride on the part of Bob Grant, a.k.a. Robert Ciro Gigante. In fact, and thanks for the call, Nick, I'll tell you one quick story on that one. So, well, this is kind of a, all right, I said I was going to tell you, so let me tell you. So Bob Grant was a very big talk show host in 1990, okay? And he was always big, but in 1990, forget about it. The kind of numbers that he would do in the afternoon, nobody had ever seen. And there's this hotly contested congressional race going on, which sees Susan Molinari, who's a Republican, running for her father's congressional seat in Staten Island in Brooklyn against the Democrat Robert J. Gigante, okay, who was a longtime fixture, still alive, great guy, he's a friend of mine, who was a longtime fixture in Democratic politics in Staten Island and in New York City. So they had this big event at what was then the Shalimar, and President Bush, George H.W. Bush, came down to campaign for Susan Molinari because it was such a high-profile congressional race. And it's a swing district just like it is now. And so Bob Grant was the MC of this event. And so then Bob finishes he gives a typical fiery speech, gets everybody on their feet. Everybody's energetic and excited and energized. And then he finishes his remarks by saying, and I happen to bring a copy of my birth certificate. And he whips out a copy of his birth certificate, and it says Robert Ciro Gigante. And he says, and I want the front page of the Staten Island Advance tomorrow to say Robert Gigante endorses Susan Molinari. And brought the house down. Forget about it. People were standing ovations. If Mean Gene, if Gorilla Monsoon were alive, he'd say the fans were literally hanging from the rafters. So then, 3 years later, Robert Giganti, the politician and the lawyer, is now the chairman of the Democratic Party and one of the many Democrats on Staten Island who was unhappy with David Dinkins. So essentially, so Robert Giganti puts out a statement with all the other Democratic elected officials on Staten Island saying that if Dinkins doesn't shape up, all the Democrats on Staten Island are going to support Rudy Giuliani. So Bob Grant sees this and loves this, says, I've got to get Bob Giganti on my show to talk about this, because you can picture a conservative talk show host loving the Democrats turning on Dinkins in the middle of a hotly contested election. So they do this good interview. They're talking about Giuliani and the mayor's race and this and that. And Bob Grant asks Bob Giganti at the end of the interview, and Mr. Giganti, is there anything else that you want to say? That's the question you should never ask any good lawyer. And Bob Giganti had to pay him back from 3 years previously. And Bob Giganti tells him, yes, the real Bob Giganti didn't have to change his name in order to make it. And nobody laughed harder than Bob Grant. He laughed audibly and said, I see you remember that. And Giganti said something to the effect of that you made it difficult to forget. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to John in Brooklyn. Hello, John.
Hello. Let me say that was an eloquent, excellent defense of Columbus and of all things
Thank you.
American with regards to those of Italian ancestry. And notice how I phrase that, because
I did indeed, John.
Heritage, and I don't refer to myself as anything but an American first.
Same here.
Ethnic background second. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you may know that our esteemed president just signed a proclamation calling today Indigenous Peoples Day.
I did know that. I have that.
Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, I have that on my list today, John. I was certainly disappointed to see that. And needless to say, again, I don't have an issue with Indigenous people having a day, but I don't see why they would want someone else's holiday as their own. To me, it was just total political pandering on the part of President Biden. And thank you for the call, John. By the way, you know, so far, a lot of the people that have called in have agreed with me. If you disagree, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to shout you down or anything. If you don't think we should be celebrating Columbus Day, if you think we should be celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day, call in and let us know, and we'll give you an opportunity to be heard happily. It's not, you know, not going to shout anyone down or anything. Michael is in Western Pennsylvania. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how's it going tonight?
I think it's going fairly well, Michael. You tell me.
Well, I have two things. I'll get to Columbus Day in a moment. First, I just want to say I'm a teenager, and I think it is so special to hear those WABC jingles on AM radio in 2021.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you approve, Michael.
I certainly do. I think you guys should consider keeping them after the anniversary. What I wanted to say about Columbus Day is I think that it's important that we as Americans keep in mind just how privileged we are to be able to even have this discussion, whether we should celebrate Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, regardless, you know, of which side of the fence, you know, that you may find yourself on.
Yeah, I agree, Michael. You're not going to get an argument from me at all. I'm in the free speech business. I love a good discussion. 800-848-9222. Nick is in Farmingdale. Hello, Nick.
How's it going, Frank?
I'm doing well, Nick. If memory serves, you're a young person as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I guess Michael and I have something in common.
That's good. You should. You guys should get together. Where do young people hang out these days? At drive-ins or at soda shops? Or where do they hang out?
I don't know. Parks.
Parks? They hang out at parks? All right. Well, maybe you guys can get together at the, you know, at the Five and Dime and do a teenage Other Side of Midnight listener party or something.
Yeah, radio convention. Anyway, I wanted to comment on Columbus Day. I was saying maybe instead of calling it Indigenous Peoples Day, maybe even calling it like Connections Day or Link Day, to commemorate what Columbus did without directly, you know, talking about him, if they really didn't want to do that. Although I'm all for just calling it Columbus Day. You know, I'm not Italian-American. I'm an American of Italian descent.
Well, I'm with you on that one, Nick. Same here. But I don't agree, right? I mean, I don't agree with your first point. I agree with your second point that, you know, just keep it Columbus Day, because I think to call it Lynx Day, it really diminishes the importance of Christopher Columbus's history and his contributions in history specifically. I have no issue, and thanks for the call, Nick, having an objective conversation about Christopher Columbus. Let's look at all the good he did. Let's look at him as an explorer. Let's look at him as a navigator. Let's look at him as a conqueror. Let's look at him as a warrior. Let's look at him as an emissary of Christianity. Let's look at him as somebody that was controversial even at the time. You know, he came back from his, I think it was his third voyage, in shackles. They threw him in jail when he got back to Europe. He wasn't just controversial here, he was controversial there. So I'm all for having that discussion. But to erase Columbus, that's a bridge too far for my tastes. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Diana in Manhattan. Hello, Diana.
Hello. Your soliloquy at the beginning was beautiful. Just beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Diane. Appreciate that.
And first of all, my family's from Spain, and October 12th is the biggest holiday in Spain. It's called the Day of the Race, El Día de la Raza. And we
love the way you
Columbus.
Said that. Love the way you said that, Diane. Do that one more time.
Spanish, yeah.
I love that.
Anyway, we honor Columbus. And third, and look, I have nothing against anyone, but you cannot have one small group decide what's right and wrong for the entire country. And it's just as pernicious to have that happen as to have a small group of white supremacists decide what's right and wrong for the entire country.
Well, thank you, Diana. I certainly agree. Unfortunately, what we're seeing in places like Oregon and Virginia and all of these other places that have done away with Columbus as a statue and as a holiday is we're seeing the majority, the elected officials in these communities who are elected by the majority of people, or at least a plurality of people, they're the ones making these decisions, for better or worse. So, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. And so far, I know it's not exactly a scientific survey, but so far the sampling of callers that we've gotten today would seem to agree that we should not do away with Columbus Day. But it seems to me that folks are pandering by doing this to what they perceive to be a small but vocal group. 800-848-9222. We'll continue straight ahead.
WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Is it an earthquake or simply a shock? Is it the good turtle soup or merely the mock? Is it a cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel the real McCoy? Is it for all time or simply a lark? Is it Granada I see or only Asbury Park?
10 minutes until 2 o'clock. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Hey, I am a many things, but of all things, I am certainly a ping pong enthusiast. So my mother was kind enough to get me a ping pong table or a tennis table, table as a housewarming gift when we moved in October or shortly thereafter. So I finally put it together. It sat unput together for a while and I finally was able to put it together and got the net working after a while. So now it's a fully functional ping pong table. And my problem is my wife is not into ping pong. She doesn't like it. And even if she, and I'm not trying to, but I'm not that good of a ping pong player, in part because I never grew up with a table. Had I grown up with a ping pong table, I would have played every day. But I'm a lot better than my wife, who has no interest in ping pong. So I really don't have many good people to play with. So I don't get an opportunity to practice that often. Now, my friend Jeffrey Goldstein came over a few weeks ago. We did a marathon ping pong session. I think we played 7 games. And my friend Joe Borelli, who you might remember is a city councilman. He's running for re-election this year. In fact, he was very active in the movement to save the Columbus Square statue 4 years ago when there was talk of taking it down. So Joe Borelli lives in my neighborhood. He's a ping pong enthusiast. And a lot of times he'll come by on Saturdays and, and he'll play with me. And the problem is this, though. Other than him, I have nobody else to play with on a regular basis. And Joe has a ping pong table in his office. So he's practicing all the time. So he came by on Saturday and we played 2 games and we were pretty evenly matched. But he ended up beating me by 2 or 3, a little more than that. But the games are closer than the scores would suggest. But he beat me in both games, which is a real bummer. But then I didn't have anybody to practice with the whole weekend. So I really need to find more players in my neighborhood so that I can get in at least 1 ping pong game a day. So if you ever find yourself in the South Shore of New York's most patriotic borough, please email me and I will be happy to, unless you come across as a total psycho, especially if you're good, because I'd like to play against players that are better than me. So the next time Joe comes around, I can be practiced enough to beat him. Frank.Morano@WABCRadio.com is my email. It's Frank.Morano@WABCRadio.com. Let me tell you what's coming up. We have a lot of other Columbus stuff coming up and a lot of other non-Columbus stuff coming up. Coming up at 2:30, we're going to talk with Dr. Bill Burns. He's been a guest on this show talking about everything. But lo and behold, I was doing some research on Columbus yesterday, and I found this special that the History Channel did a few years ago about how Columbus had seen a UFO and wrote about it in his journals. Now, he didn't just see a UFO, but he saw a USO, which is basically a UFO underwater, and he wrote about it. And in fact, the day that he saw the USO was October 11th. So Dr. Bill Burns was featured in this History Channel piece. I thought, what are the chances of that? One of my favorite guests is featured on the very subject that I was researching. So he's going to join us at 2:30. And then at 3:30, there's been a lot of debate always about what Christopher Columbus's ethnicity was. Was he Portuguese? Was he Italian? Was he Jewish? Was he something else? So we have a scholar on that question coming up at 3:30. And let me ask you a question. Don't look. Don't check. Don't look. Where is Christopher Columbus buried? Where are his remains? Well, there are a number of theories as to where his remains are, and a number of places that make a credible case for being Columbus's last resting place. Well, they've done some DNA testing to find which of these places is Columbus' final resting place. We're going to get into that with Martin Fohn at 3:30, so I'm very much looking forward to that. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Vincent in Brooklyn. Hello, Vincent.
Good morning, Frank. Everybody trashes Columbus because they say he brought all these diseases to America. First off, there was no America back then. America, as we know it, this land, was founded by the Florentine explorer Amerigo Vespucci. Columbus landed in what's now the Dom Rep and Haiti, what was then called Hispaniola. The first European to land in what we know as the United States was Ponce de Leon, who landed in what we call St. Augustine, and I actually visited the old town of St. Augustine. But they don't want to talk about all the good that Columbus did. For example, potatoes were not known in Europe.
Yeah, I said that all, Vincent. Vincent, I said that all. And tomatoes weren't known in Italy.
Exactly.
And chocolate wasn't known in Switzerland.
I said all this. They thought they were poison.
Right. No, exactly, Vincent. Thank you very much for the call. I don't think Vincent was listening from the beginning. You see, when you start repeating things I've already said, that's how we catch you. That's how we catch you. And, you know, in addition to Hispaniola, which Vincent correctly points out was a Colombian place that he visited, he also visited the Bahamas, interestingly enough. 800-848-9222. See, you've taken a cruise to the Bahamas. I've taken a cruise to the Bahamas. Little did you know you were following in Columbus's footsteps. 1-800-848. I also saw the new Sopranos movie, so I'm going to give you my review of that. And we got a lot of stuff to get to. I don't know that we'll get to it in all 4 hours. 1-800-848-WABC. Joe is in Queens. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, did you see the movie 1492?
Not only I have seen it, I liked it, even though there are many historical inaccuracies in it. But I've met Armand DeSante a couple of times, and whenever I've met him, I spend a great deal of time talking about that film because I think he's so brilliant in it.
Yeah, and Gerard Depardieu's character, too, you know.
Absolutely. It's a great film.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, another thing I think is very – I love that scene at the end, though, when he was just overlooking the landscape. And, you know, he was just tired to a degree, and he just closed his eyes, you know. But another aspect of that is just the bizarreness. If it's accurate that those three ships were sailing lonesome, that's bizarre, you know, having – you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure I do, actually. What do you mean sailing lonesome?
Meaning, okay, there's just three ships going across a huge ocean. Yeah, just three, if that was the case.
Right. Well, and thank you, Joe. And we'll get into the ships and the accuracy of the Columbus myth, because there were three ships, but their names were not the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Those were actually nicknames for the ships. We'll revisit that a little bit later. All right, coming up, we got a lot of fun stuff to get to. And was Christopher Columbus the first person in America to see a UFO? We're going to get into that at 2:30 with Dr. Bill Burns. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, hopefully you'll do what Columbus did and Barry Farber did, and you'll keep asking questions.
Is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. So finally, this past Saturday, my wife and I returned to the movies. We went with an illustrious group of people who are Sopranos fans. We went with my wife is watching the series for the first time. I, of course, saw it when it was on. And I'm rewatching it now with her. My father and stepmother, they're big fans. My sister Claudia, same. My brother Nicholas, his fiancée, and his fiancée's parents. We all went to the movies on Saturday. first time in a movie theater, in a movie house, for at least probably 2 years. Probably 2 years. Like I say, it was very comfortable. They had these reclining chairs, and it was fine. So I am a big fan of the series. And so we went to see this Many Saints of Newark. If you haven't heard about it, it's a prequel to The Sopranos, meaning it takes place in the late 60s and early 70s, whereas the television show The Sopranos takes place in the late 90s and early 2000s. I liked the film, The Many Saints of Newark, but I don't think I would have liked, not I don't think, there's no way that you would like this film if you were not a fan of The Sopranos. And even if you're a fan of The Sopranos, it's only okay. Now, there's a lot of great things to like about it. First and foremost, the cast. I thought Alessandro Nivola as Dickie Maltasante was great. Ray Liotta has a prominent part. I'm not going to get into too much of the role that he plays, but he was great. Vera Farmiga as Livia Soprano, brilliant. Leslie Odom Jr. in a big role, very good. Corey Stoll as Junior Soprano, very good. But it, to me, it was shot beautifully. It really captures what I picture Newark in the late 60s and early 70s looking like. Very realistic costumes, great sets, great cars. Edited beautifully, got very good use of music. But there's a couple of things that really bothered me. One is that there was not much of a plot to the film. Those of you that I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but basically it almost only existed as a way to provide background to characters that you're then later familiar with on the show. I think the best sequels or the best prequels, they can survive on their own independently. Meaning if you've never seen the original work, it's just as good. I mean, the best example is The Godfather Part 2. That's both a sequel and a prequel. If you've never seen The Godfather, you will still enjoy The Godfather Part 2 just as much as anybody else that's seen The Godfather. The Color of Money, the sequel to The Hustler, you can see that completely independently on its own. You can't do that with this picture. Additionally, they screwed around with some of the timeline that we were familiar with. They changed some of the history. I forget what they call that. I think it's called retconning. I didn't like that at all. I didn't like that at all because I am familiar with the show. I don't want to get into too much what they did. And I think they also changed the nature of some of the characters that we were familiar with. Junior Soprano and Johnny Soprano come most immediately to mind. But my biggest issue was there was not much of a story. Now, my father and my sister, they thought the dialogue was a little too forced, they were a little too quick to use Italian slang in a way that seemed inauthentic. I didn't find that. I didn't think that was the case. My big problem was a big lack of story. And the fact that there were all these characters depicted in the film that don't do anything. And they only threw them in there because they subsequently appear on The Sopranos. So I had, I thought it was at best okay. I did enjoy it. I mean, part of it is we've been without the show for something like 14 years now that I think we were so eager to see that world recreated again. So it's, in some ways, it's like water in the middle of a desert to a man dying of thirst. That being said, it turns out when you drink that water may as well be from Flint, Michigan. It quenches your thirst, but it's not water from a spring tap, if that makes any sense. If you're a Sopranos fan, I think you'll probably like it. But if you are a Sopranos fan, you could easily go the rest of your life without seeing it, and it wouldn't do anything to take away your diminishment of the show. a lot of attention being paid to the character of young Tony Soprano, who's played for the bulk of the film by James Gandolfini's real-life son, Michael Gandolfini. It's a big role, and they pay a lot of attention to this young man in the film. I mean, nobody wants to say anything bad about Michael Gandolfini because his father passed away, but the fact of the matter is, Michael Gandolfini is not an actor, and it shows in this film. He really was not able to master the voice and his father's unique dialect the way that I would have hoped a young Tony Soprano did. He's just not an actor. It's not his fault. I mean, it's like if you put me in a movie, what do I know from acting? He was not great. I will say this for him, and he's probably the only person that this can be said of. He did look a lot like James Gandolfini there, and by extension, Tony Soprano. Now, I don't know who else they could have cast that would have looked that much like Tony Soprano slash James Gandolfini, but that look only carries you so far. There is one scene where he's eating, and I could tell he was making an effort to eat the way Tony ate on the show, but I didn't see it. It didn't come across, especially when there are so many other good actors in the film. I just didn't see him being a good fit for this. So that's my considered review. I think they call it a curate's egg. There's a lot to like about it. There's a lot to dislike about it. That's my perspective. It's Vera Farmiga as Livia Soprano. Tremendous. Absolutely terrific. I can't say enough good things about her. So that's my two cents. If you want to comment with no spoilers, don't give any spoilers away to people who haven't seen it. If you want to see it, you can go to the movies and see it in the movie house, or you can just watch it on HBO Max. It's available. You could watch it in the comfort of your own home. But, you know, is it worth spending $12 on in a movie theater? I think probably not, to be honest. But, you know, it's your funeral. 800-848-9222. We're going to talk with Dr. Bill Burns coming up at 2:30 about whether or not Columbus saw UFOs. And then coming up at 3:30, I'm going to talk with Martin Fone about the situation involving Columbus's ethnicity. And ironically, Martin Fone will be, of all things, on the phone. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Frank in Queens. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Frank. As an American of Irish ancestry, I want to celebrate Columbus Day, because as you mentioned, in 1492, my ancestors were being slaughtered by the thousands by the English, so we were happy to have a place to escape to 300 years after that. My call is regarding, and it as an ethnic European, it's frustrating to me that there's not more backlash from the Italian-American community in this country, whether it be in the media, business, music, Hollywood. For example, how can we hear nothing from the likes of Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, as to, you know, why we're allowing this cancellation of Columbus Day and Italian heritage from the left? Because once you're done with the Italians, they'll be coming after St. Patrick in our parade, and they already are trying to, and it'll be the Greeks and the Polish and the Germans after that. So I'd like to see more pushback from the Italians. And finally, kind of connected to the Sopranos, do you think any of this would be going on if Mr. Gotti were still alive and this were 30 years ago?
Well, that's a good question, right? I mean, the reality of the situation is obviously it's not 30 years ago. So I don't know. Thank you, Frank. I can't answer that, right? You can't go back and create alternative histories. So I will tell you, I don't think you would have ever seen the crackdown on fireworks that we saw in the Bloomberg era if John Gotti was still out on the street. That's for sure. I can promise you that. But the Bloomberg and Giuliani era, I should say, for better or worse. But that was regarding Independence Day, not Columbus Day. Let me say hello to the Irishman in the Bronx. Hello, Irishman.
Good evening. You realize that the Irish Saint Brendan was in the United States prior.
Right. Brendan the Navigator. Yes. Yes.
Yes, and that the Vikings.
Yeah, Leif Erikson. Right. That's why I never said at any point, Irishman, that I never said that Columbus discovered America.
Okay. I think that the Columbus statue should be changed for statues of James O'Keefe of ProjectVeritas.com.
There you have it. There you have it. There you have it. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. Happy Columbus Day.
Thank you. You too.
You know, even though I'm Irish, English, and Welsh, I still celebrate Columbus Day.
Well, good. You don't have to preface it with, you're Irish, English, and Welsh. Welsh, you could celebrate Columbus Day of any ethnicity, I think.
Right. And you know something? A lot of people thought that John Cabot, that was a wonderful speech by you and Bob Grant. Oh, that was fantastic. A lot of people thought that John Cabot was British. He was Italian.
That's right. You're exactly right.
They taught us that in school. So why would people think he was British? Just because his name was John Cabot?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think the anglicized name was probably what did it there.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you, Carol. 800-848-9222. Charlie is in Hell's Kitchen. Hello, Charlie. Charlie, we got you? Okay, moving on. Dave is in Comac. Hello, Dave.
How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Dave. Thanks.
I'm reading this this letter by a Bedford citizen from April 28th of 2021. The origins of Columbus, they had nothing to do with the man Christopher Columbus. It was initiated due to injustice, bigotry, institutionalized discrimination and mob violence that...
Yeah, I said all that, Dave.
Okay.
But do you want to repeat anything else I said?
No, I actually didn't hear that, but I'm just saying this is the letter that I saw online.
All right, well, I appreciate you reiterating that, Dave. Thank you. Norman is in Brooklyn. Hello, Norman.
Hi, how are you? You're going to steal my thunder, but I called up to say that I love Italians. I love Columbus Day. But Columbus, you're going to say this later on, but Columbus was not Italian. He lived and he was born in Genoa, but his parents and grandparents came from the Iberian Peninsula.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into this.
He may have been Jewish.
Yeah, we're going to get into this at 3:30 with a real expert. But in my view, as I was saying earlier, and you notice it when in my opening monologue, I never said Columbus was Italian. What I said was that this holiday, Columbus Day, has become a day to celebrate the culture of Italian immigrants in the United States and in America as a whole. And I stand by that. Whatever Columbus's ethnicity was, Italian immigrants, the grandchildren and descendants of Italian immigrants, they've sort of adopted this as their holiday. So
you mentioned about the Inquisition. The reason people think he was Jewish was most Jews of Spain converted to Catholicism, but they still had a hard time. So the Inquisition was following them all the way. So they left, and a lot of them went to Italy.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into this at 3:30 with Martin Fohn, so be sure to listen to that, Norman. Thank you. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. We're going to talk with the one and only Bill Burns in just a minute. Also curious if you have a different take on the many saints of Newark than the one I offered. You're welcome to call in with your review of the film, but please don't give any spoilers away. 800-848-WABC. I will tell you, I got some great feedback and some not so great feedback, honestly, to my interview with Ronnie McMullen on Friday. Now, Ronnie is the grand poobah over at Get the Tea. And Ronnie has been very, very vocal about any number of issues, as you can tell. But the product speaks for itself as far as I'm concerned. The product is Life Change Tea. If you haven't tried it yet, I think if you try it, you're really going to like it. It's a tea that is all natural and gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It also detoxifies you. It cleanses you from the inside out. Comes in three great flavors. I just made a batch this weekend. My favorite is the pomegranate. And if you have not yet tried this stuff, I think you will find it is absolutely terrific. So if you go to the website getthetea.com, that's getthetea.com, you will be able to order some of this stuff. And if you use the promo code Frank, they call it the tea that makes you go for a reason. Believe me, it keeps you regular. If you use the promo code Frank, then you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. That's getthetea.com, promo code Frank. And in addition to that, they're going to give you $5 off your order, which is a pretty neat thing as well. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. Coming up in just a minute, we'll talk with Dr. Bill Burns and get his take on Columbus and a UFO sighting. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC. The Other Side of Midnight presents The Midnight Files.
Midnight in the desert. Shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert, and we're listening. Ooh, we're listening to you.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. One of the most popular guests that we've had on this show has been William Burns. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He's written many books. We've talked to him about a wide variety of subjects. Some of his more recent books include UFOs and the White House, which is pretty fascinating. I've read that, as is all of his writing. All of his books are pretty fascinating. He is somebody who's a wealth of knowledge. And lo and behold, when I wanted to see what Christopher Columbus and his history was with respect to UFOs, I found this History Channel special. Lo and behold, who's in the History Channel special? But William Burns. Gives me a great deal of pleasure. Welcome back, Bill Burns. Bill, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Oh, thank you, Frank. It's my pleasure.
So, Bill, what exactly do we know based on Columbus's journals, including a very interesting entry on October 11th, today's date, in 1492? What do we know about what Columbus saw on his voyage that might be a little out of the ordinary?
Over 500 years ago, when Columbus was approaching, I guess, the island of Hispaniola, he called it Hispaniola, he saw a light under the water. It was moving along alongside the hull of his ship, Santa Maria, and it was, and then he observed that the light, he thought it was a fish at first. I mean, some kind of strange fish. And the light moved independently. Then suddenly, to his shock, the light flew out of the water, a light, and shot up into the sky. Columbus was so amazed that he called his all of these vessels had scribes, and the scribes would make the log entries. The captain didn't make the log entry. The scribe made the log entry. And he calls the scribe and he says to the scribe, I want you to note this down. And he says, there was a light in the water that was following the ship. and took off and flew. Nothing flies like that, and flew into the sky. The scribe wrote it down. That's how we know from Columbus's own journal that he was the first European to see a UFO in the New World.
Two questions. One, is there any sort of natural or mundane explanation that might explain what Columbus saw? And two, I know that Columbus and many explorers of his ilk were of the belief that when they came to Asia or to other parts of the world that had largely been unexplored, that they would see all sorts of unusual monsters, cyclops and all sorts of other things that had been written about from the time of the Roman Republic. Is there any chance that Columbus could have had some of that in his head and created something that wasn't there?
All of that could be true, except for one thing. It flew. And that was the shocker, that it's not that it was a light in the water, because when we were down in that part of the world, because people had reported UFOs in the water, we went down there to explore it. And we were in the Gulf, and we were sailing off those islands. And we saw lights in the water, too, but the lights in the water were aquatic life.
Mm.
There is aquatic life that is incandescent, and we saw it. The shock for Columbus was when this thing, A, wasn't a fish, wasn't an octopus, wasn't a squid. It was an actual craft, and it flew. That was the shocker for Columbus, that it was flying, and it had no wings.
Talking with Bill Burns, he is the author of the book UFOs and the White House. How does it, now, when a UFO is submerged and it's seen in the water, we call that a USO, right?
Correct. That's exactly what we call it, an unknown submerged object.
And how does the description that Columbus wrote about in his journal of October 11th, how does that compare with other subsequent descriptions of USOs that other people have seen?
When we talk to fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico, we're down in Florida, and we were talking to fishermen who go out at night, and they were telling me that they see the strangest lights. And so obviously, you know about incandescent aquatic life. We were out there in a rowboat looking for incandescent light in pitch blackness. Talk about scary.
I can imagine.
And they said, no, these aren't fish. We fish these waters. We know what fish are like. The incandescent fish are not big. They're small fish. He said, these are big lights. So we were out there, and he was saying, this fisherman was showing us where he saw these lights. And he was standing on the edge of his boat, and he pointed to how big this light was. And he said, I didn't want to stay around to see what it was. I took off. In that part of the world, what we have heard from United States Navy undersea geologists, there are such things. They said that what they couldn't account for between Florida and Cuba was what they thought. It was very deep trench down there. And they said what they thought, they were like cubicles, not cubicles, but cylinders, like upside down test tubes in the water. And they didn't know what they were, but they couldn't send submersible craft down to find out. So that's one. The other thing is, the other deep trench is off the coast of California between Santa Monica and San Clemente Island. And there, too, is a deep trench. And folks on Coronado Island and folks on San Clemente Island have said they have seen these same underwater objects that are very large that seem to float through that trench. So what we believe, what people who study UFOs believe, is that A, they're not just coming here from outer space on a regular basis, like it's a bus schedule, that there are bases under the sea where these creatures, they're probably us, and these craft reside. And that's what we believe, and that's why USOs have been underneath the oceans 500 years, let's say 10,000 years.
Wow. Wow. Now, I know we've spoken about this before, but for the sake of our audience who may not have heard our previous discussions, when you add that term, probably us, as far as the entities that are beneath the surface of the ocean, what do you mean by that exactly?
Here's what I mean. I believe we're in the midst of a pandemic, right? And raining down upon this planet and being transmitted is a virus. What if the viruses, instead of being totally pathogenic, of course people died, yes. But the people who died, when you look at the statistics, they're comorbid. What if our planet has been visited? First of all, what if life on this planet started through viruses? That's not far-fetched. We know that viruses have been bombarding our planet for over 4 billion years. What if aliens have been here? We are the aliens. We were the life forms that were created from the elements of this planet. And there are aliens who have been here under the surface of the water, watching us, directing us, controlling our society, because we are a colony of their home planet, whatever that is. And we were terraformed. We know that there were comets that passed through our solar system, Oumuamua and Borisov, that these comets came from outside our solar system, and they were orbiting and spinning in exactly the wrong ways. In fact, they were orbiting in such a way that they were like lawn sprinklers. And we believe there's water on the surface that contains bacteria, that contains virus, because virus can live in space and spores. They don't need oxygen. And when they land on a world and start inhabiting that world, if life can take there, it takes there. If not, they move on. I believe that's what happened with planet Earth, and I believe they are still here under the oceans. And so this is not just they're landing here, they've been here.
What do you base that belief on? Is there any evidence or that would support that hypothesis?
The only evidence is personal. First of all, folks should watch what's on television right now. It's Isaac Asimov's Foundation. When I asked Isaac Asimov, I think almost 50 years ago, when we brought him to our college to talk, I asked him about Foundation and Empire, his major trilogy that's now on television as a series. I said, you know, if I were a conspiracy theorist and somebody said to me that our planet, our civilization, was being controlled by extraterrestrials, then Isaac Asimov was laughing about it. And I said, so, and then here's your trilogy. And basically what you're saying in fiction is that our planet, our civilization, has been manipulated by a secret cabal of foundationers for thousands of years. And I mentioned there are artifacts that go back longer than human civilization. We can't explain that. So Isaac Asimov looked at me and said, it's science, all right. It's just not fiction. And so when we're doing UFO hunters, flash forward now to the 2008, and the Cometa report in France comes out, and the Cometa report basically validates everything that Philip Corso said in the book that we wrote together called Day After Roswell, about secret, about how the government secretly reharvested and re-engineered these technologies from the UFO that crashed at Roswell. So we were talking about that, and the Canada Report said, yes, that's true, that's what happened. And so I asked this person who was one of the translators from French to English, and he told me that there is a group of extraterrestrials. They communicate. They live here. They look just like us. In fact, they are us, and they're controlling everything. They control businesses. So I mentioned Isaac Asimov, and he burst out laughing and said Asimov knew this because they told him that. So that's the only evidence that I have, except for the fact that when you look at some of the artifacts on this planet and you look at human history, there's a disconnect in some of these artifacts. Why is there water erosion on the Sphinx? I once asked Jackie Kennedy that when I bumped into her at Doubleday Publishing in New York. This was years and years ago, and she wouldn't talk about it. And she was an Egyptologist, she said. And in this temple in Turkey, very, very old, it's older than 10,000 years, it's called Göbekli Tepe. On the walls, Frank, it says, this was built by the old ones. If that's 10,000 years ago, who are the old ones? Right. Then you read Plato. What does Plato say? There was a great, great flood across the whole earth that wiped out an entire civilization. That sounds familiar, right? That's Noah's flood. And then you look at the archaeological evidence, and you see that at one point before human history, the Caspian Sea flowed into the Black Sea. We found the outline of the Ark on Mount Ararat already. And what destroyed Göbekli Tepe and the civilization that built it? And why did Plato say that he had it on firm, firm, firm authority that there was a great flood that destroyed Atlantis? The history is there, Frank.
Not that his opinion would be any more valid or more or less valid than anyone else's, but did Columbus have any sort of a theory as to what the USO he witnessed was?
Columbus was a genius. When you realize what Columbus had to calculate he was one of the first entrepreneurs. You know, we should look at that from that point of view, too. Look at how he did this. He actually had to use his own calculations. This was not a cheap voyage, by the way. This was not, you know, four guys in a canoe.
Yeah. No, that's the most impressive part of the voyage is he got the king and queen of Spain to pay for it.
That's right. And he knew exactly where to go. I mean, one of the techniques, one of my favorite entrepreneurs was Thomas Edison. Real briefly. Thomas Edison's first invention, one of his first inventions, was an electronic voting machine that in the 19th century that you couldn't fix, and nobody bought it because they said, why would you want a voting machine where you couldn't change the votes, right? It's true. This is a true story. So Edison realized from that point of view, only invent something that people want. Well, that was Columbus. Columbus knew that what happened in 1492 or what happened in 1491 or 1490, two of the kingdoms in Spain united, right? Ferdinand and Isabella, that made Spain the most powerful country in Europe. And in fact, it stayed that way until the Spanish Armada in the late 16th century, right? So for 100 years, this was the most powerful country on the face of the European continent. So Columbus was smart. He knew you just don't go to England. You don't go to France. You go to the country that has the most money that suddenly has expanded to be the most powerful. So that's where he pitched his idea. Now, think about the idea he pitched. Again, genius. Columbus said, look, if there is another world, and he knew it because of Marco Polo and the writings of Marco Polo. He said, so instead of going all the way around the world one way, what if there was a shortcut? And if there's a shortcut to the world that Marco Polo talked about, where there are spices and treasures and jewels and a whole kingdom that can enhance us, why don't we go west instead of going east? And so he had to convince them that his calculations, which, by the way, were wrong, but his calculations were correct. And sure enough, he landed Hispaniola. He thought it was the West. He thought it was the East Indies. It was the West Indies. But having landed there, sure, all the stories about taking slaves are true. But at the very least, even so, Columbus united Europe with a whole new continent they didn't know existed.
So to go back to my prior question, what did Columbus, if he expressed an opinion, think these USOs that he observed were?
Well, at first they thought they were monsters. And then they realized they were craft. That suddenly Columbus was in a world where there were craft he'd never seen before and things that flew without wings. So he knew they weren't birds. He didn't think they were monsters, because if they were monsters, they would have eaten him. So he thought that what they were was simply a whole new world of technology that he didn't know. That's why he told his scribe to write it down. Things didn't fly in the 15th century except birds, and these weren't birds.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Bill Burns. He's got a ton of great books. I recommend them all. But you should certainly check out UFOs and the White House. Bill, were there any other incidents of sightings that Columbus experienced either on the 1492 journey or on the subsequent three journeys of either UFOs or USOs?
Oh, yes. I mean, Columbus saw many different versions of lights in the water. And finally, when they were able to communicate with the indigenous peoples, I mean, yes, there were issues with the indigenous peoples, the same with America's Vespucci, but they told him stories of the star people that came down from the sky, because Native Americans in the New World, in North America and South America and on the islands, they all saw objects in the sky. In fact, if you were to look at some of the stone carvings in the American Southwest, they're UFOs, Frank. They're flying saucers. It's unbelievable. And they're all kinds of strange shapes. And you talk to some of the members of the native tribes, and they say, sure, this is part of our legend. This is part of our lore. The star people, those are the creatures who brought us here. And Columbus knew about some of those stories.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Since it is only a couple of weeks before Halloween, want to pick your brain on a couple of other items, namely the issue of ghosts of past presidents and any ghosts that there have been reports of in the White House. You've covered the White House at length. You have sources in many different presidential administrations that you've spoken to for a variety of your books. Have there been any past presidents that have returned, at least reports of returning, as ghosts?
Oh, wow. The White House is the most haunted house in America. And the American presidency, starting with George Washington, even before the Revolutionary War, during the French and Indian War, that the history of our presidents, in fact, one of the most famous ghost stories, two of the most famous ghost stories involved George Washington. George Washington was a colonel, in fact, a lieutenant colonel at first, in the colonial militia in Virginia. And during the French and Indian War, General Braddock enlisted, this was in Pennsylvania, he enlisted the help of the colonial militia to escort the British troops with him to Fort Duquesne. It's now, today it's Pittsburgh. And they tried to, and the British fought in squares, right, the hollow squares, and in the field they were invincible. But in the forest, in the woods, the Native Americans, the Indians, would simply pick them off with their own rifles. And they were decimating the British troops at Fort Duquesne because they were allied with the French. And Fort Duquesne was very important for the British because it controlled entrance to the Ohio Valley and the Great Lakes. So the, Braddock said he was going to force a charge across the Monongahela River. And he did. And he got shot. And Washington saw Braddock fall, and Washington commandeers a cart and his own unit of militia. They force a crossing across the river to retrieve Braddock's body. Braddock is wounded, not killed. And an Indian chief has George Washington directly in his sights. And as he pulls back the flintlock to fire, he says, we have his testimony, he's long since dead, that the Great Spirit descended upon Washington. And he didn't fire because he knew that Washington was protected. Flash forward 20 years, Valley Forge. Washington's army is in disrepair. They're not even wearing shoes, Frank, at Valley Forge. They didn't eat. These were people whose crops were being destroyed. They were living in the snow in the west of Philadelphia. And Washington went out into the woods to pray. Now, how do we know the story that I'm going to tell you? Because Washington himself wrote it in his journal. We have the journals. It's in the book, by the way, UFOs and the President. So UFOs in the White House. So Washington goes into the woods to pray, and he sees the image of a flying orb and people jumping out of the orb. And then he sees an image of an Indian chief. Guess what? That was the Indian chief that had Washington in his sights and had died a week before Washington saw him in Valley Forge. Washington himself is a figure at the Battle of Gettysburg. He leads Union troops. This is in the Army records, by the way. He leads Union troops to the right hill and leads them down the hill to fight off a Pickett's charge on Little Round Top. And he saved the Battle of Gettysburg. And then during the Eisenhower administration.
Well, again, I just want to reiterate what you said there, Bill.
Sure.
Because you didn't misspeak. The Battle of Gettysburg took place during the Civil War. And what you're saying is there's a record of George Washington, who died about 60 years earlier, leading American troops in the Battle of Gettysburg.
That's correct. And that was written into the Army records by the person who was the commander of that unit. It was from Maine, and he became the governor of Maine. And there it is. A person in a white coat on a horse with a tricorn hat with a drawn sword leads the Maine regiment down the hill. They were out of ammunition, Frank. They were going to be slaughtered by the Confederate troops. He leads them downhill, bayonets drawn, into the teeth of the Confederate army, and they blunted the charge. And the Confederate officer says, we're never going to fight that unit again. That's what Washington did. Now, flash forward to the 20th century, President Eisenhower, my favorite president, is walking down the halls of the second floor. He sees the image of George Washington standing over in the corner. He has the building engineer look. The White House is in a state of collapse. It's 55. The White House is in a state of collapse. Eisenhower has to move. They have to move. Mamie and Ike have to move to another building because the White House is being shored up. When Julie Nixon Eisenhower was on the Colbert Report years ago, she pipes up. She says, oh, George Washington's ghost is in the White House. Lincoln's ghost is in the White House. She said that on camera. Maureen Reagan, Ronald Reagan's daughter, said that when she would stay over in the Lincoln bedroom when her father was president, she would smell cigar smoke. She couldn't figure out why she smelled cigar smoke. One night she opens the door to the Lincoln bedroom and sees a figure in a stovepipe hat smoking a cigar. She said, I'm never going to sleep in that room again. Same thing happened to Winston Churchill when he was there during World War II. Same thing happened to Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands when she was living there in World War II. The White House is a haunted house.
We're talking with Bill Burns. If you're interested in this subject, you might want to check out the book he's co-authored with Joel Martin. It's called The Haunting of the Presidents, A Paranormal History of the U.S. Presidency. Why do you think, Bill, that the White House has been such a hotbed of paranormal activity? You say the White House is the most haunted house in America. Why? Is it because it's old? Is it because there's a lot of history there? Why do ghosts, be they of presidents or anybody else, why do they choose to linger around there of all places?
The theory is that this is very spiritual. The theory is that if you have at your point of death, a great doctor, by the way, that folks should look up, who specializes, and he was a hospice doctor, okay? So a hospice doctor and an ICU doctor, they will see people die and be at the point of death and brought back or die peacefully, maybe sometimes 2 and 3 times and 4 times a day for an ICU doc. And this person, Zachary Bush, said that he's been at bedsides of people who have died. And after all the heroic attempts to bring them back fail, right? They're dead 5 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, your brain collapses. But they're dead for like 5 minutes, clinically dead. They pop open their eyes, and they look at the doctor and say, "Why did you bring me back?" And he heard that so many times. You've got to see this on YouTube. He's heard that so many times from his patients that he decided to make a study. So he made a study. And all of them say that have died and come back, that there was a presence, not just a light, but a presence, a place, that they were conscious of being in a different place. And so the theory of people who say, "Oh, there are hauntings, there are ghosts," is that if you die before your time, or if you die when there are unfinished things that you have to do. Think about Lincoln having been assassinated and dying of sepsis the next day. Think of that, because there was much to do. There was much reconstruction to do. And he died before his time. So his ghost lingers in the White House, and his ghost still lingers. Same with George Washington. I mean, the way George Washington died was, I mean, it's 1799. Washington has retired from the presidency. He served his 2 terms, and he is inspecting. Remember, he owns a plantation. Yes, he was a slave owner. He owns a plantation, and he's inspecting the posts around his plantation. It is winter. It is December 1799, a dreadful day in Virginia. And he comes home and he's sopping wet in weather that's in the 30s. Martha Washington says, "George, get out of them wet clothes." He says, no, "I'm going to stand by the fire." Sure enough, gets a cold. What do the doctors do for him?
They bled him with leeches, right?
Cold. Yeah, they put leeches on. Bled him. They bled him to death.
It's wild.
"Why are you bleeding me?" Yeah, that was medicine. That was medicine, circa 1799.
Bill, it never seems like we have enough time together, but I'm going to have to end our conversation here. I want to encourage people to check out all of your books, but especially UFOs and the White House. There's some fascinating, fascinating stuff in there. Thank you very much for the time this morning.
Have a great Columbus Day. And a great Halloween.
Likewise, Bill. I'll look forward to our next conversation. Bill Burns, if you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American.
The sun go on shining. Why does the sea rush?
Hermits, the end of the world. Love Herman's Hermits, always have. One of the fine British groups that we have that we've seen capture the music world by storm, not only in the United States but around the world. And we are going to go live to the UK in about a half hour to talk with Martin Fone as we continue on the Columbus Day edition of The Other Side of Midnight. What happened to Columbus's remains? Where are they? Well, we're going to get into it with Martin Fone. And what was Columbus's ethnicity? We're going to get into that. He's a fascinating guy and an interesting author. So I'm looking forward to talking with him at 3:30. Want to welcome a gentleman who is our telephone talent coordinator for the morning, the one and only Ryan. Ryan, how are you? Thanks for joining our little program here. Good. How are you dealing with your first day working these weird overnight hours? What do you normally do? All right. So what do you spend your weekdays doing normally? All right. Well, welcome. I hope you make the most of it. Yeah. Now, you may ask, where is Molly? Molly has been, very happy to tell you, promoted to associate producer of this show, where she's going to take a broader role in everything from booking guests to social media to getting audio to coming up with talk topics to all sorts of other things, coming up with news stories for the WABC Early News. So she doesn't have time to deal with you people answering your calls. You're stuck with Ryan, at least for the next day or two. We'll see what happens in the future. But for those of you that are sticklers for consistency, as you can hear at the top of the hour, Matt Sapienza is still here. How are you, Matt? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. Yours, Frank?
Too short. Too short. All right. Well, we're going to hear from Matt in just 15 seconds as he brings you 77 seconds of news. We got denunciations coming up and your phone calls. You're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Until next hour, you should help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. I got a couple of emails here from listeners who said they could not hear Ryan when he was speaking. First of all, let me assure you, you were not missing much. It was not exactly tremendous amount of pearls of wisdom that we got in the last few minutes. And two, that was the first test of his time with us here. And unfortunately, he failed. Could not figure out how to turn his microphone on. So, you know, to paraphrase Clemenza in The Godfather, you won't be seeing him no more. So you don't even need to worry about remembering his name. He's going to be a distant memory. He's going to be like Columbus.
Oh,
we're replacing him with an indigenous call screener. I think we can hear you now, right?
Okay. You hear me now? Perfect.
All right. So now you figured out how to turn your microphone on.
Yeah,
good.
I definitely got an explanation from Molly and Matt here.
There you go. I do have to compliment you, Ryan, in that so far none of the callers have had their radio on when they've gone on the air, which speaks well of you.
Yes, thankfully.
So far you're batting 1,000.
Yes.
There's still plenty of time for that to change.
Oh, yes. I've been alerted that things could definitely change
That's
in
right.
a moment's notice.
Well, deal with a couple of E. Frank calls. calls, and then we'll see where you are at the end of the morning. All right. Well,
no,
thank
but
you.
So far, yeah, welcome he's doing again. He's doing a bang up job. Molly and I can attest that he's one of the best at the station. So
thank you, Matt.
Congratulations and welcome aboard to this little team.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank.
One of the best at the station.
Mm-hmm.
That's
at least in my eyes.
That's high praise. Who else falls in that elite category, man?
Obviously, Molly.
Yeah,
Molly.
No, I would agree with you on Molly.
Molly, Alex, Eric Salas. Those are in my eyes the most top notch call screeners that I've worked with.
So you picked four that are among the best.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Well, that's you're in some elite company. Let's see where we end up over the next 2 hours. All right. If he does a good job today, that would, of course, be commendable. And who knows? He may make the big time one day and find himself on this list of...
The Other Side of Midnight presents Commendations.
I must first give a sincere commendation to Ryan Alonzo, known in the local community as the Skip Man. He is a Filipino who has broken the Guinness World Record for most double under skips. This is incredible. He had over 20,000 double under skips. This is tremendous. He set a new record. He's the nephew of a vice presidential candidate in the Philippines. The old world record was 20,000. So he was over 20,000. How much over, you might ask? 40,980 skips on a jump rope. Double under skips. This is amazing. 40,000 jumps or skips in 12 hours. This is extraordinary. This kid is superhuman. So congratulations, Ryan Alonzo, not only on your Guinness World Record, but on your commendation. I have to give a commendation to my friend Mike Porcelli. Mike Porcelli, you've heard him on this show before. He's called in. He's helped us out from time to time. He's been an expert guest in terms of cars. When my sister-in-law was stranded with a flat tire out in Long Island, he drove all the way out there. He is by far the most knowledgeable car person I've ever met. He is by far the most skilled mechanic that I've ever met. And as of now, he has every possible mechanic certification that you can have. I believe that's 42. I stand to be corrected if that's an inaccurate number, but I believe it's 42. In fact, I don't think it's 42 because 42 is my number for everything because of the book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's the ultimate answer to life, the universe, and everything. So it might not be 42, but for some reason, 42 is in my head as if I was Arthur Dent. So the point is, Mike Porcelli now has every single possible auto mechanical certification that you can have. And I don't know that you'll ever see somebody do that again because some of those certifications have been discontinued. They're no longer offering them. So he can fix, certified as such, every possible thing that you can imagine. I want to commend journalists Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov. They are the recipients of the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize. Oh, yes. They won the Nobel Peace Prize on Friday for their fight to defend free expression in the Philippines and Russia. Ressa is the co-founder of the investigative digital media company Rappler, which has focused on the brutal war on drugs waged by Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. And Muratov is a co-founder and the editor-in-chief of Novaya Gazeta, an independent newspaper holding power to account in Vladimir Putin's Russia. So the Nobel Committee said it recognized the pair for their efforts to safeguard freedom of expression, which is a precondition for democracy and lasting speech and lasting peace. I would certainly agree with that. The more free expression we have, the better off we all are, as far as I am concerned. I want to commend Dawn Dorland. I don't know if you've been following this story in the Times. And in fact, we might have to do a whole segment just on this story because this is wild. It is a wild story. And if you haven't heard about it, basically, there's a situation where a person, Dawn Dorland, gave up their kidney to a stranger. A stranger. Because she knew that there was a problem with having enough kidneys. It was not as if her friend or her cousin or her sibling needed a kidney and she donated one. This aspiring writer named Dawn Dorland gave a non-directed donation of her kidney. And I have friends and family that have given kidneys, and I find that impressive. But to give it to nobody in particular, I find that superhuman. So she gave this not to a particular recipient, but to the person surgeons decided needed it most. Then she became upset when a more established writer named Sonia Larson used details from the event in a published short story. So amidst all the online back and forth over this, the thing that seems to have gotten lost in this story is that what Dorland did, giving a kidney to a stranger in need, is one of the most purely altruistic acts anyone can do. More than 100,000 people who are on a kidney wait list will likely die within the next 5 years if they don't receive an organ. That's even with dialysis. If they get a donation, they gain a decade of additional life on average with very little risk to the donor. It makes it a nearly unmatched act of effective altruism. So all this talk of who stole whose story, we're missing the fact that this person did something pretty remarkable here. And I think she deserves some credit and certainly a commendation for that. Well, the bad news is that I did not get an invite Saturday to the Fury Wilder pay-per-view matchup. I was really hoping somebody would come through. And then I was hoping I'd be inundated with people saying, Frank, can we come over and you order the fight? Neither of those things happened. And in fact, by the time my wife and I got home after dinner, following the Sopranos movie and going back to my dad's house for cigars, we were both pretty tired, so she persuaded me to go to bed, and I don't think I could have stayed up to the main event anyway. But if you didn't see the fight, which I did not, here's what you missed. Tyson Fury beat Deontay Wilder with an 11th round TKO in what's being described as a classic fight that included five knockdowns in the third fight between these two gladiators. Fury went down twice. Wilder went down three times, getting floored the last time with a powerful right hand. And that's when the referee promptly waved off the fight. So this is pretty exciting. So with this victory, Fury remains the WBC heavyweight world title champion and the heavyweight lineal champion. So now what we're going to see is a rematch between the Anthony Joshua fight and Usyk. And then whoever wins that fight needs to fight Tyson Fury. And then once and for all, we will finally, once again, have one heavyweight champion of the world in boxing, which we have not had for many, many years. Remember when we talk about guys like Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, Evander Holyfield, George Foreman, Riddick Bowe, even Buster Douglas for a time. These guys were all the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Now, you have different divisions recognizing Tyson Fury and different recognizing Usyk. So it's going to be interesting to see if that title unification bout comes to fruition. I'll tell you what, when that does come to fruition, that fight, I'm ordering it. No matter what it costs, no matter if I'm watching the fight by myself. I want to commend, and I don't want to repeat everything that I said in the first hour, but I want to once again, especially since today is Columbus Day, and we're going to be talking about Columbus with Martin Fohn coming up in about 15 minutes. I want to once again commend Christopher Columbus. The accomplishments and the level of change to the world that Christopher Columbus brought about is unlike almost anyone else in the history of humankind. He discovered a viable sailing route to the Americas. He was somebody that opened the door to colonization of the Americas. He led the first European expedition of the Americas. And his settlement in Hispaniola provided Spain incredible strategic advantage for their expansion into the New World. The fact that he made European colonization possible, if he did nothing else, that would be worthy of having a day. He had a major impact on the history of mankind. How many people can say that? And his whole Columbian exchange, which I described earlier, caused a huge increase in the population of the Old World. Also, he was a political figure as well, served as the governor of Hispaniola. Now, his rule was pretty controversial, but it is interesting. He's regarded as a major figure in the history of the world, and with good reason. I want to commend Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Now, I happen to be fond of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, and Halloween is coming up, so there was a survey on the website candystore.com, and they've been delivering and distributing bulk orders of candy across the country since 2007. But aside from the survey, they used their sales data since 2007 to determine which candy is the most popular in the United States. The winner, far and away, Reese's Cups. Who's number two? This surprised me, actually. Skittles. Number three, M&M's. Number four, Starburst. Number five, Marlena Shivo's favorite, Hot Tamales. I want to give a commendation to McDonald's. Yes, that's right. If you listen to me, you know I don't patronize McDonald's. Not a big fan of McDonald's. But this week, McDonald's is making school day mornings a little brighter for educators and showing their appreciation with a free breakfast meal. That's right. Any educator, any teacher, any principal, any assistant principal, they will get to enjoy a thank you breakfast courtesy of McDonald's. It comes with an entree breakfast sandwich, either an Egg McMuffin or a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit or something, hash browns, and a hot coffee or an iced coffee. This is great. As far as I'm concerned, teachers do not get enough credit in this country. They have an incredibly hard job. They have to deal with students that don't appreciate them. They have to deal with parents that don't appreciate them. And too often, they have to deal with administrators that don't appreciate them. So they have it from all sides. And I know a lot of people think teachers have a pretty sweet deal because they get summers off. They deserve that and a whole lot more. I'm thrilled they're getting a free breakfast courtesy of McDonald's. McDonald's, I do commend you. I also want to reiterate my congratulations and give a formal commendation to our new associate producer, Molly Fichter, who has been an instrumental part of this show's growth and has done just such extraordinary things in a short amount of time. And I have no doubt that with her new role, she's going to help make this show a lot better. So for those of you that don't like the show, hopefully Molly can turn it into something listenable for you. And I want to finally commend Blue Origin. Blue Origin in allowing William Shatner to go to space this week is doing something pretty extraordinary. Now, it was initially scheduled for Tuesday. It's been pushed back a little bit to Wednesday. We're going to have all sorts of coverage of this. I think a lot of the criticism of Blue Origin, I think a lot of it is sour grapes. Some of it is probably warranted. But I think sending a 90-year-old William Shatner into space is the perfect coda to his career and to his life. And for the better part of the last century, William Shatner has been the coolest man on the planet. As of Wednesday, he will be the coolest man in the Milky Way galaxy, because this is extraordinary. And kudos to Blue Origin for allowing Shatner to have this opportunity and for allowing so many of Shatner's fans like me to share in this opportunity. So thank you, Blue Origin. I do commend you. And then finally, I want to give a sincere commendation to Joe Nolan. We all had dinner with Joe Nolan on Friday, everybody except Juliette Huddy, but we had my wife and I, Deb Valentine and her husband, Molly Fichter and her boyfriend, and Matt Sapienza and his predecessor, Christian Arnold. We all had dinner on Friday. Joe Nolan picked up the tab for all 10 of us. He said it was being reimbursed by his employer, Total Traffic. I have my doubts about that. I think he was just saying that so we wouldn't give him a hard time about paying for everybody. And then, even though he had to be up at 6 a.m. the next day to do the Rutgers football game, had us all over to his house for dessert right after dinner, where he was just a delightful, delightful host. So, very, very memorable evening, which I will comment on a little bit later, if time permits. All right, we're going to talk to Martin Fone in just a minute. Where are Columbus's remains? How difficult can it be to keep track of a skeleton? Apparently, it's more difficult than you might imagine. We'll get into that. And what ethnicity was Columbus? We'll explore that question as well on the latest edition of the Murano Mysteries. But here's a mystery for me. I cannot understand why some of you still have not yet ordered Life Change Tea. This is a phenomenal product. This is a tea that's specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. It tastes great. There's no fillers, no GMOs. It's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. That's why they call it the tea that makes you go. You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And boy, do we have a deal for you. If you go to getthetea.com and you order some of this tea or any of the other supplements on there, yes, you'll get the free shipping anywhere in these United States. Now, I know some of you are listening internationally. The Gordon from Canada, or that guy from Canada that was kind of weird that we spoke to on Friday, or Martin Fone calling in from the UK. What about you guys? Well, if you use the promo code Frank, you will not get the free shipping because it's a uniquely American thing, but you will get $5 off your order. Now, that's a great deal. At some point, if you still are not ordering Life Change Tea, you're just being stubborn. You're just trying to stick it to me. So go to getthetea.com, use the promo code Frank. You will enjoy this product. You will notice it gives you more energy. You will find your digestive health significantly improved. All right, we're going to go live to the UK in just a minute and talk with Martin Fone. And he has done some great, great work in terms of chronicling a lot of the Columbus scholarship that has been out there, particularly with respect to Columbus's remains. We'll explore it next. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC. The Other Side of Midnight presents.
What you're about to hear is not a news broadcast. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. This is the Murano Mystery.
I don't think there's been a greater mystery over the course of the last 500 years than where is Columbus buried? We think we know, then we think we don't know. We think we know, and then, oh, there's something that we discover that turns out maybe we were wrong. We do a DNA test and seems to suggest one thing. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, maybe that DNA test isn't what it's cracked up to be. A gentleman who has been great at providing answers to mysterious questions has been Martin Fone. He is the author of 50 Curious Questions, Pablum for the Inquiring Mind. And he wrote this terrific article, which I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. Curious Questions, Why Does Nobody Know Where Christopher Columbus Is Buried? Martin, thank you so much for joining me on the radio this morning.
It's a pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine, and you've done some great work chronicling a lot of existing scholarship, compiling it in one place, and putting it in terms that even a dullard like me can understand. So let me begin by asking you the question you ask your readers in this piece. Why does nobody know where Christopher Columbus was buried? I would think it was a pretty big deal when he died. Why wouldn't we have just paid attention?
Well, yes, and I think it's quite ironic that someone who shuttled backwards and forwards across the Atlantic, not quite knowing where he was going, his remains have also shuttled backwards and forwards across the Atlantic, and no one is quite sure where they are either. And I was fortunate enough to visit the magnificent cathedral at Seville in Spain, and in the south transept there's a magnificent memorial to Columbus, and that is where his mortal remains are said to be. And
in Seville, Spain.
In Seville, Spain, in the cathedral in Seville. And when I got home, I was thinking about it, and a little bell rang in my mind that perhaps it wasn't quite as clear-cut as the Spanish tour guide led me to believe. And so I did a little bit of digging into what happened to the body of Christopher Columbus, and discovered, as I was saying, that his original wish was to be buried in the Americas. So when he died in May 1506 in Valladolid, which is a city in Spain, he was buried there initially. And then his body was removed to an island called La Cartuja, which is just off the coast of Seville, as a temporary transition point before a magnificent cathedral was built in what was Spanish Hispaniola, what we now know as the Dominican Republic. So when that was built in 1537, his bones were shipped over to rest in peace there. But you could argue that Columbus is the victim the victim of collateral damage following the collapse of the Spanish Empire. Because when the Spaniards gave up control of Hispaniola in 1795, then the remains of Columbus were shipped over to Havana. Then in 1895, the Spanish-American War broke out, and Columbus's remains were then moved from Havana to Seville, the final resting place, or so we're told. The problem, though, is that in 1877, in the cathedral in Santo Domingo, that's the Hispaniola cathedral, some workers found a lead box bearing the inscription, "Illustrious and Distinguished Male Don Cristobal Colon," which was his Spanish name. And so ever since then, there has been a dispute as to whether the actual remains of Christopher Columbus were transported from the Dominican Republic via Havana to Seville, or whether the Spaniards in their haste just picked up the wrong set of bones.
So if the official story is to be believed, Columbus was initially buried in Spain, then the remains were shipped off to Hispaniola, what's now the Dominican Republic, then Havana, Cuba, then Seville, Spain, where they supposedly remain to this day. But in 1877, almost 400 years after Columbus died, they found essentially another tomb in Hispaniola bearing Columbus's Spanish name.
Correct. Yes.
So what with tech? Go ahead, please.
Yes. And then in 2006, the Spanish carried out a DNA test on the remains in Seville, and they seemed to match with Columbus's brother Diego. But the Dominican Republic authorities have so far refused to carry out a similar test on the bones that they've got. Intuitively, it seems as though his remains are actually in Seville, but until scientific analysis of the bones in the Dominican Republic are carried out, then the question will still remain in dispute.
What? So I take it the 2006 results on the Seville remains, the DNA did match that of his brother Diego?
Correct, yes.
And why have the Dominican authorities given any indication as to why they won't agree to a DNA test?
Not officially, but I think it's the resolution of the problem one way or the other will either diminish their claims to be the burial site of Columbus or not. So I guess they consider it to be a risk that's not worth taking.
Mm. So if the body or the tomb that was discovered in 1877 in the Dominican Republic is not Christopher Columbus, who do we think is this skeleton that has the name Cristobal Colon on it?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. And you would think or you would hope that the right bones would be put in the right tomb. And we know from recent events how frantic withdrawals are from countries. So it is quite conceivable that in their haste, the Spanish did pick up the wrong box or perhaps even forget about it.
Is it conceivable that the remains might be bifurcated between the two locations, that there's some remains that are in the Dominican Republic and some that are in Spain?
Well, that's another intriguing possibility. And there are a number of cases where famous people's body parts have been split up and buried in different parts. A famous one being Thomas Hardy, whose heart was buried in a different place from the rest of his body.
If Columbus's final wishes were to be buried in the Americas, as impressive as a tourist attraction as Columbus's final resting place is for Seville and for Spain, why would the Spanish authorities not respect that and allow him to be buried on this continent?
Well, that's also a very good point, but Seville owes much of its wealth to Columbus's discoveries. It was the gateway for all the gold and other riches that came from the Americas. I guess they also feel that as they were the initiators of his exploration, they should reap the benefit of his success.
The DNA test, and if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Martin Fone, who is the author of 50 Curious Questions, Pablum for the Inquiring Mind. You can check out his blog at window throughtime.wordpress.com. There's some fascinating things on there, and you can get some of his books through his website, martinfone.wordpress.com. The DNA test that took place comparing the Diego Columbus DNA to that of the remains that are in Seville. Are we pretty sure about the integrity of that source DNA? For instance, is there any speculation that maybe the DNA that came from Diego wasn't actually his?
Yeah, well, that's also an interesting point. But the authorities carried out the tests seem to have been fairly convinced that they were testing A, the bones of Christopher Columbus against B, the bones of Diego, and the DNA match seemed to tie the relationship between the two of them.
Wow. In terms of the so the only two places that we're aware of now that are claiming to be the final resting place of Christopher Columbus are Seville, Spain, and the Dominican Republic.
Correct, yes.
There's been so much written about and speculated about and debated about Christopher Columbus's true ethnicity. Clearly, a lot of Italians claim Christopher Columbus as one of their countrymen. The Spanish absolutely wear a lot of pride in Christopher Columbus's journeys to the New World. But there's also been some speculation that he might have been Jewish or Portuguese. What do we know about Christopher Columbus's ethnic origins?
Well, he, first of all, he was born in Genoa, so that is in Italy. But he was a bit of a peripatetic. He had this dream of carrying out explorations, and so he travelled principally to Portugal and Spain to interest the royals in either of those two countries in putting some money forward to funding his expeditions. So but originally he was born in Genoa, so it would initially seem that he is Italian, but there are some thoughts that that isn't quite all that is the case. He had, as I was just saying, strong ties with Portugal, suggesting that he was born there rather than Genoa. But he did marry into a noble Portuguese family, and some scholars suggest that that wouldn't have been possible unless he was Portuguese by birth. And others are suggesting that he was Spanish all along, but in fact, it is likely that he was Jewish.
That's likely, you say?
Yeah, it is likely that he was Jewish, of course, being Jewish in Spain around that time wasn't a very safe thing to be. There is a suggestion that he was quite circumspect about declaring his origins. So there are good arguments to be made for all of his ethnicity claims, whether he be Italian, Spanish, or Portuguese, and also Jewish. And I will imagine that this will be an argument that will carry on for quite some time.
What name did he go by in real life? Here in New York, in Brooklyn, there's a Cristoforo Colombo Boulevard. You talked about the tomb that was found in the Dominican Republic, calling him Cristobal Colon. What name did he go by?
Well, that's another excellent question. The conventional wisdom, if that's the right phrase, is that he was born as his birth name was Cristoforo Colombo, Cristo, C-R-I-S-T-O-F-O-R-O, Colombo. And then over time, that's been anglicized and Latinized to Christopher Colombo, Columbus. But also the Spanish name is Cristobal Colón. So again, it depends which nationality you are as to what his name or the version of his name that you will use.
Well, it's a fascinating, fascinating subject, and I want to encourage everybody to read this article about how often Columbus's remains may have traveled back and forth between Europe and the Americas. It's fascinating to think about, and it may be a mystery that is never solved. But it's one of the many great questions that Martin Fon gives the old college try to answering. And you can see some of the other questions if you check out 50 Curious Questions Pablum for the Inquiring Mind. Martin Fon, thank you so much for joining me on the radio.
It's a pleasure. And I've got a new book coming out later this month called More Curious Questions. So, which will include the Christopher Columbus question.
What's the best way for people to get a hold of that?
That will be, the best way is through Amazon.
Amazon, and you could search Martin Fon, F-O-N-E. Thank you very much, sir. I'll look forward to chatting again in the future.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
800-848-9222 if you want to comment on any portion of our conversation. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
When I was a little bitty baby, my mama would rock me in the cradle in them old cotton fields back home. When I was a little bitty baby, my mama would rock me in the cradle in them old cotton fields back home.
It's the Highwaymen singing about cotton. You know, have you been following what's happening with cotton? There has been a spike in cotton prices. Cotton prices are hitting a 10-year high. But as I've been telling you, everything is hitting a 10-year high. Inflation is out of control. More on that a little bit later. Now, Friday evening, we went out for dinner with Joe Nolan to Westfield, New Jersey. Now, this dinner, we've been working on putting it together for about 5 or 6 months. That's not an exaggeration. And it began when I asked Joe Nolan what the best pizza he'd ever had was, where his favorite pizza was from. And he said, no contest, Ferraro's in Westfield. And sure enough, you know, it used to be a pizzeria at the time that he was growing up there. And then they've expanded to they built the restaurant out, and now it's a fancy Italian restaurant. And this was only my – so finally, Friday was the first date that that Juliet and I could both go. And then Juliet kind of got sick at the last minute. She's still a little under the weather. She's going to be off today. And so she wasn't able to come. But everyone else went, Deb and her husband. But it's funny. Deb never gave me a hard and fast answer. I asked her on Thursday. I asked her on Friday. And basically she said, we don't have any plans. We'd like to come, but my husband has to work until 7. We have to see if he can get out of work early. Now, to me, that's not a commitment. That's not a firm yes. That's a we'll see. So, I mean, how do you plan in terms of a reservation for we'll see? Now, the way I do it is I do it with odd numbers. So I always make a reservation for an odd number. 3, 5, 7, 9. Why do you do that? Because there's no such thing as a table for 3. A table for 3 is a table for 4. There's no such thing as a table for 5, unless it's a round table where everybody squeezes in. Table for 5 is really a table for 6. So I always figure you're covered either way. You can go up or down 1. I don't know if that's a smart philosophy, but that's my philosophy. So Deb texts me about 20 minutes, or maybe 15 minutes before the prescribed meeting time. We're on the way, but we hit some traffic. So she's running late. Christian Arnold, the prior producer of this program, he was running a little bit late. So we all eventually crowd around this table. We all get there eventually. Molly brings her boyfriend, who was very nice. He's quiet, but he's also very handsome. Matt, a little too handsome, right?
A little too handsome. Yeah. We had some competition.
Well, I'm married, Matt. I didn't have any competition. But he was like, he's like definitely a little too handsome, I think. But so we go to dinner, and believe it or not, I couldn't remember. And I've known Joe for many years, and we've worked together for many years. And I've, of course, seen him on television for literally decades. I've listened to him for decades. I used to listen to him 30 years ago when he would do the traffic with Bob Grant and Jay Diamond. And certainly his work with Curtis and Lisa. And I asked Joe when we sat down, and I felt strange asking this because I know Joe so well, and we communicate so many times every day through phone, through on-air communications, through text messages, through email. I communicate with him more than I communicate with almost anybody except my wife. So I said to him when I sat down, I said, Joe, is this the first time we've ever met in person? And he said, absolutely. So I wasn't sure, but sure enough, because I figured when he was at PLJ and I was at WABC, and we were owned by the same company, that maybe we would meet at the Christmas parties because PLJ and WABC used to have a joint Christmas party along with ESPN and Radio Disney for a time. So he claims we never met. Now, both Joe and I like to hit the sauce, so there's a chance that we might have met at one of those Christmas parties, and we whatever brain cells were dedicated to that meeting went away. So we have a great dinner. Great food. Rachel had the eggplant parmesan. I had the pizza because I'd heard all about the pizza. And we had a bunch of great appetizers. There was Cajun calamari. There was fried calamari. There was burrata. There was a cold antipasto. It was a feast of all feasts. The owner, Chuck, who seems like a great guy, bought us a bottle of wine. And I had a great time. You know, it was one of those things where with 10 people, which is ultimately what we were because we kept expanding the table, it was tough to have conversation with everybody. But because everybody was so kind of crunched together, you did have an opportunity to talk to the person on your right, on your left, and across from you. So that covers a lot of ground. So I was sitting next to Joe on my left, Rachel on my right, And you know what we should have done with the couples? Because what happened was Deb's husband, who everybody agreed was a pretty nice guy, he would come over to our side of the table to talk to Joe and talk to me. We should have done like they do with the White House and separated the spouses so that Molly's handsome boyfriend had to talk to other people and Rachel had to talk to other people and Joe Nolan's wife had to talk to other people. But we didn't do that. We didn't have the foresight to do that. Next time we do this, maybe that's what we'll do. Although I don't think Rachel would be that pleased at being at a dinner where she doesn't know anybody and then not even being able to sit next to me. But who knows? She might even prefer that. Who knows? So we go through this dinner, and at the end of the dinner, Joe becomes – he tells me as the dinner's wrapping up that, you know, his employer, Total Traffic, which we contract with to do the traffic, that they're going to be picking up the tab for this. And I said, what? That's crazy. I'm still not sure I believe him because he didn't have a Total Traffic card. He had his own credit card that he put down. He says, no, they reimburse me. It's all about maintaining good relations. All right, which was really nice. So then Joe had told us that that he wanted us to come back to his house afterwards, which is only 1.4 miles away, for dessert. They picked up all this great dessert. And so we go back to Joe's house afterwards. Now, just by way of a little context, since the time Seinfeld was on, occasionally I have been compared to not Jason Alexander, but George Costanza, especially the later seasons. Because in the first two seasons of Seinfeld, Jason Alexander is pretty much doing a Woody Allen impression. He becomes a lot more himself the subsequent seasons of the show. And a lot of people have said, I think because I'm short and I'm stocky, that I kind of look like George Costanza, but I don't have the baldness or the glasses that he has. But also, I have been told occasionally that we have some of the same mannerisms and some of the same intonation. Now, I've never really bought that, but I don't discount it. You know, I've heard it from so many different people that chances are if everybody tells you you're drunk and you insist that you're sober, that you should get a ride home. And at least 20 people have told me that I remind them of George Costanza in some way. And it's not a comparison that I ever viewed really complimentarily because George is not really considered handsome. Plus, he's also not considered that put together. You know, he's kind of a mess, right? Anyway, I had a whole new empathy for George Costanza after Friday night. Now, you remember the episode, The Big Salad. Now, there's a great Seinfeld episode where George is dating this woman named Julie, and they're walking to lunch, and they run into Jerry and Elaine on the street. And they agree to meet up later, and Elaine asks George and Julie to pick up a big salad. That's the order, a big salad. So George and Julie go to lunch, and they get the big salad for Elaine. The waitress hands Julie the big salad. They go back to Jerry's apartment, and this is what transpires.
Hey. Sorry we're late.
Oh, it's no problem.
Here's your big salad.
Thank you, Julie.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, well, I guess I better get going. Cash me mother to Guggenheim. You sure you don't want to go?
No, you Guggenheim. I'm not much of a Guggenheimer.
Sure, George.
Yeah. You go.
Okay. I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care now. Did you see what just happened to?
Well, that all depends.
Did you happen to notice that Julie handed the big salad to Elaine?
Yeah, so?
Well, she didn't buy the big salad. I bought the big salad.
Is that a fact?
Yes, it is. She just took credit for my salad. That's not right.
No, it isn't.
I mean, I'm the one that bought it.
Yes, you did.
Don't you think she should have said something?
She could have.
Oh, I know.
A match. Her taking credit for your big salad.
You know, you buy a big salad for somebody, it would be nice if they knew it.
Obviously.
So, lo and behold, we go Friday night. there are eight of us that are guests of the Nolans, eight of us that are not named Nolan. And so Joe's very good first to pick up the dinner tab and then to, you know, get all these fancy desserts and have us over and give us more drinks. And then subsequently he showed us where he broadcasts from sometimes and his elaborate Lionel train set and all this great radio memorabilia. And so I brought Joe a bottle of Woodford Reserve bourbon because I know he likes Woodford Reserve. So I bring it to Joe. And he's at the bar, and I hand it to him, and there's a sea of liquor bottles, all sorts of great liquor. And I hand Joe the bottle of liquor, and I said, here, this is for the house. And he says, thank you, everybody. And now, keep in mind, this was not from the eight of us. It was just from the Frankster. And so I'm looking around for somebody to say, oh, no, it's actually just from Frank. And yet this is what I hear. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody says you're welcome. Nobody says, not even me, because I'm now shocked waiting for one of these eight people that's not, one of these seven people that's not named Frank Morano or Nolan to say, oh, no, that's not from everybody. It's just from Frank. But nobody did. So the group accepted by silence a thank you for this collective bottle of Woodford Reserve. And then I felt bad, not because I had to share my thank you with seven other undeserving recipients, but because it makes us then look cheap. Now, a $45, $50 bottle of bourbon is not bad if it's from one person. But if it's from seven people, then we should have gotten something a little fancier. So that was a major distraction for the remainder of the evening. Is that Joe Nolan is still under this impression that this bottle of Woodford Reserve was from all eight of us, when in actuality it was just from one of us, and maybe Rachel, because she's married into my bourbon buying habits, she can share half credit. But that's where we are now. And I'm not sure, you know, you can't really bring it up on the WABC Early News because we have this all news format of traffic and everything. But that's where we are now. So maybe Joe Nolan will hear. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it. Everybody, this is The Other Side of Midnight. You know, a month or so ago, we did a story and a talk topic that was largely, I don't want to say it was largely theoretical because it was being proposed. A lot of people were writing about it. A lot of people were debating it. And at the rate that people were being hospitalized, it looked like an issue that hospitals were going to have to contend with. The issue that we dealt with, some of you may remember this, was if you make a decision, if you choose not to get the vaccine, should you be able to, once you get COVID, take a spot in an ICU bed, right? Should you be able to take somebody's spot in a hospital if you've made the decision on your own not to get vaccinated? Now, I understood that question and that argument. I understood it. But I ultimately came down on, no, of course, you should be getting the same healthcare treatment that everybody else gets. Because if somebody is chooses to be a gang member and they get shot to death, not shot to death, but shot, they get operated on in the hospital the same way. Somebody eats five cheeseburgers a day and they have a heart attack, they get health care and get treated the same way as if they led a vegetarian lifestyle. So that's where I came down. But I understood the argument, because if there's a finite number of beds and the unvaccinated people are the ones causing these beds to fill up, should they have the same right to a bed as someone else? I understood the argument. I didn't buy into it, but I understood it. What we are seeing now in the state of Colorado is absolutely outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. A Colorado woman with stage 5 renal failure was months away from getting a new kidney. Now she and her donor, hear what I say, her donor, she had a donor that appears to be a match and that was probably going to be a good fit. We don't know for sure, but they had just begun the testing on the donor and she was probably going to be a good match. Now, she and her donor are looking for another hospital after learning UC Health's new policy. UC Health runs the hospital where they're at. And according to UC Health, the majority of transplant recipients and living donors are now required to be vaccinated against COVID-19. And neither woman, not the donor nor the recipient, has gotten their shots. So this hospital, UC Health, is denying a kidney transplant to an unvaccinated woman in stage 5 renal failure, even though the donor wants this woman to have her kidney. The donor doesn't care that she's not vaccinated. To me, this is absolutely outrageous. As the donor said, here I am. I am willing to be a direct donor to her. It doesn't affect any other patient on the transplant list. How can I sit here and allow them to murder my friend when I've got a perfectly good kidney and can save her life? So Leilani Lutali said she received a letter from the Colorado Health System at the end of September explaining that she and Jamie Faulkner, she's the donor, have 30 days to begin the vaccine process. If they don't, they would be removed from the kidney transplant list if they refuse these shots. This is absolutely insane. This is absolutely nuts. Again, this woman is donating specifically to Leilani. Specifically to her. She's not, as she said, she's not affecting any other donor on the list. And yet they are refusing to carry out this life-saving procedure. This woman is going to die in all likelihood. I mean, unless they find another hospital that plays by different rules. But this hospital is going to allow this woman to die because of this rigid vaccine policy. Here was Leilani discussing her feelings with a local news station.
I feel coerced. I feel like my life is being held in their hands in exchange for a shot. And, you know, the attitude is just take the shot.
Now, first of all, I'll be honest. That's what I would tell this woman. If this woman were my friend or family member or a total stranger, I would say, excuse me, you have an opportunity to live many years. Get the shot. But ultimately, you have to respect her beliefs. And in this case, she doesn't want to get the shot because of her religious beliefs. She's a born-again Christian, and she believes that these vaccines are derivative of aborted fetuses. Now, the Pope doesn't believe that, and the Pope is pretty dead set against abortion. So I think that's a faulty reasoning. I think it's nuts what she's doing. However, that's the thing with religion. You're entitled to be nuts. And State Representative Tim Geithner, not the former Treasury Secretary, but he has the same name, Colorado State Representative Tim Geithner has been coming to her aid, advocating for her, saying she should be able that saying this policy is ludicrous. This is State Representative Geithner.
The understanding is basically conform to this demand, take this COVID vaccine, or otherwise you will be denied a life-saving procedure.
I find this completely outrageous. at 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Three open lines if you want to jump on board. I am as pro-vaccination as you can be. I think everybody should get vaccinated unless they have natural immunity from having had the disease or they have some strong health reason not to get vaccinated. But if this woman doesn't want to get vaccinated, it should not cost her a kidney that the donor is earmarking specifically for her, and it shouldn't cost her her life. I find this to be absolutely ludicrous, and I am surprised that this story has not gotten broader coverage all over the country. I had this story on my list for a possible denunciation for UC Health on Friday, but I said, no, let me allow myself more than a minute or two to talk about it so that if callers have objections that I'm not considering, they can raise them with me and we can discuss it. But I have not seen this story get the coverage that I think it deserves. This is nuts. I mean, you remember all those warnings about rationed care during the Obamacare debate 11 years ago? This is what we're talking about. This is actually much worse because this donor, this kidney donor, is earmarking her kidney specifically for Leilani Lutali. Who in the world is this hospital, which is supposed to be in the business of helping people and saving people's lives? Who is this hospital to say, sorry, you went and found somebody that was generous enough to give you their kidney? Tough, because the two of you are not vaccinated. Oh, you can't do your business here. This is idiotic. 800-848-WABC. Give me your view. Jennifer is in Boston. Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, Frank. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And congratulations on your anniversary with Rachel and the program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I haven't talked to you since those occurred.
Thank you.
In any event, I had 2 points to make, please. First of all, what would they do if this was a child that wasn't eligible for the vaccine and needed it? You know, had a life.
That's a great question. Great question.
Okay. And I mean, I think that's deserving of an answer from them, right? I mean, what's the difference? A few years? I mean, it's insane. And the other thing is, you picture this, Frank, and I think you and I both know the answer. I haven't seen Leilani, but if, let me just say, if she was an African-American woman, which I don't think she is, I wonder if they would do this. And also, if this was an illegal immigrant being detained somewhere in need of a kidney, but I guarantee you every Democratic member of the House, their hair would be on fire. And this is just disgusting. That's just an American citizen, like you said, like her decision or not, it is her decision. And if everyone else around her is vaccinated, as we know, vaccinated people can still get the disease and transfer the disease. So this is just a bunch of hoo-ha, you know what I mean? And this poor woman, this hospital will have blood on their hands if she can't get somebody to do this for her. And God bless the woman that's, you know, taking up for her and willing to give her a kidney, which is a huge decision for anyone. And I commend them, and I'll pray for the woman. But this is disgraceful in this country, Frank.
100%.
I appreciate you bringing the story to light. I really do.
Well, thank you for the call. One of the things I did want to mention is both of these women said they're willing to sign any medical waiver necessary in order to make this happen. Two, I don't know Leilani's ethnicity. She is dark complected, so I don't know if she's Hispanic. I don't know if she's Italian. I could see her being Hawaiian or indigenous. She could be part African American. So I do disagree with Jennifer's supposition of the racial aspect of this. I don't think that just because I don't think if the person making this decision was black, that the hospital would be making a different policy, but I don't know. I mean, we can't deal with hypotheticals, but I don't know what this woman's race is. It's difficult to tell based on her picture, but I don't care, quite frankly. To me, whether she's, you know, black, white, yellow, you know, I don't care, Hispanic, Polish, Alsatian, she should be entitled to make whatever decision that she can make. And if she's got a kidney donor, this hospital ought to perform that transplant. Pronto. This woman could die. Renal failure, stage 5. This is nuts. It almost seems to me, and I get that they have a policy, but you got to deviate from the policy. It almost seems like they're playing games here, as far as I'm concerned. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Frank in Manhattan. Hello, Frank.
Hello, hi. The whole issue with the hospital and the vaccines, if the hospital's policy, and it's a private hospital, if their policy is that they don't serve anybody that hasn't been vaccinated, to me, that's their prerogative, provided that they carry that policy across the board. Anybody that comes in for stitches, somebody that comes in that has a heart attack, car accidents.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing, Frank. Do you think someone gets shot and the ambulance brings them there? Do you think they're really going to say, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry, we can't deal with the shooting victim because we don't know if he's vaccinated"? Of course, that's not their. That can't be their policy. What they're saying.
Well, I agree, but if they're going to carry this out, they should carry it across the board, and then there would be so much pushback. They have to pretty much take in what they can take in.
What they're saying, Frank, and thank you for the call, what they're saying is that if you're not vaccinated, you're much more likely to get COVID and die. And when they decide who should be getting kidneys or any sort of organ, they give those organs to the people that are most likely to have a long life. Now, I get that. That is a sound policy. If you're just picking up an organ from the heap of organs that they have at random in the hospital. You go to the back room, pick up a kidney or a heart, stick it into the next person that needs one. It's a sound policy to say, no. We want to give these to people who have a good shot at living a long time. But that whole rationale completely goes out the window when you have a donor that is willing to give the kidney. The donor is saying, I want to give it to Leilani. She's not saying, I'll give it to anybody that wants one, like that freelance writer I told you about earlier. She's saying, I'm giving it to this person specifically. I don't care that they don't have a COVID vaccine. Now, again, I wish Leilani would just go and get the vaccine. I think her rationale is pretty weak. But it's her decision. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Jerry on Staten Island. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, how are you doing? Right. I was just thinking in terms of if an insurance help, policy, they might be able to appeal it through because of the denial for the procedure at the hospital. And I think the insurance could get involved, a large insurer that's going to participate in paying for the procedure. I think that's like a previous caller said, blood on their hands. I think they should turn around. If that poor woman dies because of the denial, they should sue the hospital and possibly put them out of business, shut them down.
Well, I don't know.
With the insurance appeal.
Yeah, again, I don't know what her insurance situation is, and I don't know what the legal culpability of the hospital is here, Jerry, but you might be right. However, I mean, just for putting aside the insurance aspect of things, and thank you for the call, and the legal aspect of things, there is a moral issue here. I mean, you're a hospital. The first part of the Hippocratic Oath is supposed to be do no harm. By allowing a woman who will die without this procedure to die, you're doing a significant amount of harm. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Larry is in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. You know, Frank, I think you're wading into dangerous waters when you say it's a sound policy if the kidney was coming from a general donation bank. Because the only criteria up to now that's ever been applied is age. Because that's a standard predictability of how we know the mean of people's age and everything. There are so many ways for people to die. There is no way to say that there's a bigger chance of them dying. You know, there's also...
Well, no, but Larry, and I have had friends that have gotten organs. One of the things that you're not allowed to do if you get a kidney is drink alcohol. If you're caught drinking alcohol while you're waiting for that kidney, you're done. They go down to the next person on that list, because the thinking is that that if you're willing to drink alcohol while your kidneys are failing or your liver is failing, then you're going to be a lot more reckless in doing things, and they don't give you the organ.
But the thing is, they're making a judgment call on recklessness. It could be that person is a hermit. If he lives up in a mountaintop somewhere and doesn't have an exposure to the public, who are they to say that he has to be vaccinated?
Yeah, Larry, I get that. But where the argument you bring up, and it is a good talking point, and it is interesting to think about. But it's almost theoretical, right? Because what's happening here is something that is very concrete. This donor wouldn't be giving her kidney to someone else. So the kidney's right there.
Frank, well, you're drawing a dangerous line, Frank, okay? When you say this is moral, but this is immoral, the whole thing is immoral. They're murderers from the beginning to the end, no matter what. If they don't do this operation, they're murderers, period.
Well, I am willing to draw these lines, but I think this woman should get vaccinated and then go and get her kidney transplant and go live another 25 years. But if that's against what she perceives her religious beliefs to be, that's her prerogative. And this hospital to do this is outrageous. 800-848-WABC. Pamela is in Central Jersey. Hello, Pamela.
Hi, Frank. This is such hypocrisy and actually unethical, because if you were a celebrity who abused alcohol, you'd be put at the top of the list whether you had the shot or not. And we know that.
You're probably right. I mean, I was just actually discussing this off the air with Sid Rosenberg. You know, Mickey Mantle, who we know was a pretty significant alcoholic, he was able to get an organ donation when he needed one. One wonders if his name was Mickey Smith, if he would have gotten an organ as quickly as he did with the history of troublesome drinking that Mickey Mantle had.
Exactly. I agree. So this is playing God now, and you know, but if they're a private industry, they can do that. She should consider moving her.
Well, again, and the problem is, and I hope she is able to find another hospital that can do this, but the problem is the clock is ticking here, and she's going to need to begin this transplant process quickly. But it's just a rough situation. I know Sophia in Brooklyn is one of our great listeners, and she's similarly situated and could use an organ. Sophia, tell people your story and your perspective and where you're coming from and what you think about this specific incident that we're talking about.
Sure. Thank you, Frank. Good morning, everyone. One thing I want to say, Frank, you usually call me Sophia, so I was a little disappointed because I feel like I'm in an exclusive club of the Frankism.
Well, you know what it is, Sophia, and I will call you Sophia if that's your if you identify as a Sophia. Our new telephone talent coordinator, Ryan, wrote your name in a very Sophia manner, rather than a Sophia manner. Whereas I think Molly used to write it in more of a Sophia manner.
Well, it is Sophia, but when you say Sophia, I feel privileged to be in the club of your Frankisms.
Well, see, that's a nice thing, Sophia. If you can't get an organ that you need, at least be in the club of Frankisms. Am I right?
You know, any club with you, Frank, is a privilege. I just adore you. So getting to this thing, I have to really talk fast because I'm actually wrapping my arm. I'm on my way to dialysis. You know, we wrap our arms to try to numb it from the huge needles, two needles that we get stuck in our arm every day. So this is what's frustrating to me, Frank. I just found out about this this, you know, regulation now that we're not going to be able to get transplants because of the vaccine. I'm not vaccinated. I have nothing against vaccines. I've just taken a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude with this vaccine because it's so new, and we don't know the effects it's going to have on dialysis and kidney patients. So I want to see. You know, every day you hear the results of it, a lot of people having adverse effects, heart conditions. We're already, dialysis patients are already under a strain because the machine takes its toll on our bodies. I'm a normally healthy person other than the kidney disease. So now I have to deal with it possibly affecting my heart or other things going on. So I'm hanging on by a thread.
Let me ask you, Sophia, though, is the hospital that you're dealing with, are they adhering to the same policy that you can't get an organ transplant if you're not vaccinated?
I haven't checked directly with them. I just came across this information.
I would check. Weekend. I would check.
I will check. I have to absolutely check. It may be too new. They may not have anything implemented yet. I don't know. These are all untreaded waters for us, you know? And it frustrates me because I feel like the government is just taking more liberties and, you know, reaching even further into our lives. This is a life and death situation and a decision for all of us, but more so for people that are going through, you know, in my similar situation. We don't know if this vaccine is now going to compromise other organs like our hearts. I think we should have it's all right to say we want to now just wait and see if the vaccine is going to affect us. If not, I'll take it. But once you tell somebody you have to do something like this, where is it leading us into? What's the next step?
Yeah. No, no, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a slippery slope and a dangerous one. Now, totally. Sophia, what's your situation like in terms of where you are on the donor list? How close are you to getting a donor?
Okay, so I've been on the list now about, I want to say, the better part of 3 years, maybe a little longer. We don't know because you just never know how the list is moving. I'm listed here in New York City, but now I understand they've expanded, you know, the to different states. So it could expedite the list. Frank, you don't know. I could get a call. My call with you now could be interrupted by the hospital calling me, say, pack your bag, get into the hospital. It could happen like that. It can happen in 10 years. We don't know.
Now, Sophia, if somebody wants to give you a kidney that they're not using, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you or to contact you or to let their kidney be Sophia'd?
Via Frank Moreno. That would be my best bet.
Okay. Maybe I'll have them email me, right? All right. So if somebody wants to give Sophia a kidney, you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. And let me tell you, you should really think about doing this. One, it's a good deed. You'll make Sophia's day. You could save her life. Two, you probably go right to heaven. Once you give somebody a kidney and it saves their life, you probably can get away with a lot of swearing and maybe even some infidelity and a lot of, you know, cutting people off on the parkway and still probably make it to heaven. Three is
instant merit in heaven.
Exactly. Three is, think about what a great thing this is to do for me, right? What a great story this is for me if our show is able to get Sophia a kidney. It makes us look like we're literally saving lives. So if you're not going to do it if you're not saving Sophia, if you're not going to do it to save your own soul, do it for me because I could use the publicity here. So if you're willing to give a kidney to Sophia, email me and we'll connect you with her, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. And Sophia, I'm going to put you on hold. Make sure Ryan has your email so that all the kidneys that are going to be sent my way, I can forward them on to you, okay?
Frank, thank you for being so selfless about this. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, I'm not totally selfless.
But I love you. God bless you.
Well, thank you, Sophia. Please.
Now,
I'm not totally selfless, Sophia, because honestly, I can't afford to lose you as a listener. I need you living as long as possible. this is totally selfish.
The extra kidneys that they're going to start sending you.
I don't know. Maybe I'll move to China. I'll set up a little kidneys for sale business. All right. So if you hang on, give Ryan your information there. All right. We're going to do the $1,000 minute in just a minute. Those of you that are holding that want to be heard on this, I will give you an opportunity to be heard. But Ron in Jersey City has a comment about the Joe Nolan dinner and the thank you, the omnibus thank you that nobody said anything about.
Well, Frank, being at a table amongst everyone, I don't think you could really set yourself apart and be noted that it was you that's given the bottle.
No. But understand, Ron, we were at Joe Nolan's house, and I handed him the bottle. I handed him the bottle, and he says, oh, thank you, everybody. It's my favorite. And then instead of somebody saying, well, you know, that actually wasn't from everybody, it's just from Frank, this is instead what Joe Nolan heard in response. Yet, zip, zilch, zero, nada. So, I mean, Ron, well, I mean, somebody could have said something.
I'll meet you halfway.
Thank you.
I'll meet you halfway on this. I can't expect anyone to say anything, but it would have been nice if Joe could have just directly stated, hey, Frank, that was nice of you. Maybe Joe didn't realize.
No, he just assumed it was from everybody.
Yeah, because you were there with the whole crowd.
Right, you're right. You're right, Ron.
It's like I went to a restaurant and one of the guys had a coupon, and they wanted the full extent of it instead of sharing it with the whole table.
What? That's outrageous.
Yeah.
That's not somebody you should be friends with anymore.
And by the way, one of your isms, I used to call the town of Pequannock, New Jersey, Pequannock.
I like that. I like that, Pequannock.
All right.
I don't have much reason to talk about Pequannock, honestly, though, Ron. Ron, thank you for the call. Hey, we're going to do the $1,000 minute next. What does that mean? It means if you can answer 10 questions in 60 seconds, you'll win $1,000. Spoiler alert, there are some Columbus-related questions there, so be prepared for that. If you get a question incorrect or if it takes you more than 60 seconds to answer, then you lose. If you want to be the seventh caller to 1-800-848-9222, that's 1-800-848-9222, we'll give you an opportunity to be heard. Those of you that are holding and to go on the air and talk to me, if you continue to hold, I will get to your calls. 800-848-9222 for those of you that want to try and compete with 10 questions in 60 seconds. 1-800-848-WABC, the $1,000 minute, straight ahead.
You're hearing things
on 77 WABC.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Looking for my baby.
Lisa Stanfield, All Around the World. It became a lot easier to go all around the world after Christopher Columbus's voyages. Yet another thing that we owe him, at least in part, along with other people, Magellan and others. But certainly a lot easier. All right, it is time for us to give one lucky listener an opportunity to win $1,000 because it's time for...
The Other Side of Midnight presents...
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Chris Libertini. Those are the rules. You get a question wrong, contest ends. Let's meet today's contestant, Jeff, in Sussex County. Hello, Jeff.
How you doing, Frank? I'm nervous as hell.
Oh, don't be nervous. Don't be nervous.
I'm good. Just getting ready to get on the Trog's Neck Bridge. Let's do this.
Good. You got to clear your head and relax. That's the key. People freeze on these easy questions, and that's a surefire way for disaster. All right. You ready to go, Jeff?
Let's do it.
What year did Christopher Columbus make his first voyage to North America?
1692.
Jeff, I'm blown away. 1692.
With 1992. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big difference. It's two centuries.
Come on.
All right.
Tell me.
All right, Jeff. Hang on. You know what? I'm afraid we can't give you a hat for that one, Jeff. That is a terrible performance. 1492! 1492! The difference between 1492 and 1692, it's every difference in the world. That's the giveaway question. That's the name of vowel. That's the... I'm blown away here, Jeff. Well, thank you for being such a good listener, though, and calling in and trying to play. I'm floored here. I'm floored. I can't get over that. Cannot get over it. But so there you have it. Jeff did not know that Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. But here's what I don't understand with Jeff is then he then goes to quote part of the rhyme, 1692, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. I mean, I don't know. All right. What else we got here? You want to call about the kidney situation? You can, 800-848-9222. But we actually have an entry into the 77 WABC clip of the day. I believe this is from the Cats at Night, the Cats Roundtable?
No, this is not. This one comes to us from the Rita Cosby Show.
Oh, the Rita Cosby Show. That's right. Okay. Here, Rita talks with Republican candidate for Nassau County District Attorney Ann Donnelly, expressing her outrage over the no cash bail policy.
With the subway pushing, this woman has seven priors, including an assault. She was out on no cash bail. It's unfathomable. What is your reaction as a seasoned prosecutor?
Rita, as a seasoned prosecutor and as a mom and as a citizen in the state of New York, I'm appalled by what's going on. And we used to be able to ask for bail on these individuals, not so much to send them to jail, but to send them for a mental examination. And if they needed to be hospitalized, to get them hospitalized and medicated. And we can't do that anymore. We can't reach out and help someone who might have a mental issue. Seven prior arrests, almost all of them involving shoving and assaulting on the subways. How can we let this go on?
That is Ann Donnelly. She's the Republican running for Nassau County DA. You can listen to Rita Cosby every weeknight from 10 p.m. to noon. Not noon, 10 p.m. to midnight. I generally listen to her show as I'm driving in each night. She does a great job. She does a great job. And that Ann Donnelly is pretty impressive. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I would pay closer attention to the race if I lived in Nassau County. But based on what I know of the two major candidates, if I lived in Nassau County, I would absolutely vote for Ann Donnelly. I find this Todd Kominsky to be a little slippery for my taste. Nice guy, but he's been wrong on everything, including the cash bail law. And he just seems like your typical politician, whereas Ann Donnelly seems like a law enforcement officer. And for that job, DA, that's what I would think you'd want. So that's where I'm coming from. All right. Hopefully you're doing something fun for Columbus Day. I'll tell you what I have going on today. I was asked late Friday by our bosses here at the radio station to host the noon show today that's normally hosted by Charlie Kirk from the parade. So I am going to be at the Columbus Day Parade today on the air from noon until 1 p.m. We have a variety of interesting guests. I'm not sure who those guests will be, but you can bet some of them are going to be Italian-American. Some of them are going to be famous. Some of them are going to be not so famous, but I'll be there from noon to one. I don't like to say no to management when they ask for things, and it should be fun. I'm actually pretty proud to be a part of this event, and big thank you to John Catsimatidis and the management of our station for including me in the New York Post ad in Sunday's New York Post promoting our special Columbus Day coverage. So I'm looking forward to that very much. Listen, beginning at noon. Now, the big question for me is, what do I do between 6 a.m. and noon? Because today's a rough day. It's a long day, and it's a fun day, but it's a rough day. Juliet is off today, too. She's out sick. So this 5 a.m. hour is a tough hour to do solo. I mean, I'm not solo in that Valentine's going to be here with local news. Matt Sapienza is here with sports. But I don't have a co-anchor. It's much easier when Juliet can do half and I can do half. But so it's going to be an interesting day. So then what do I do between 6 a.m. and 11:30 when I have to be down over by the parade and start preparing? Well, my plan was initially to go to Arthur Idala's law office and sleep on his couch. He has now given me a building ID so that I can go right into his law office and go to the Sinatra room, because there's a picture of Frank Sinatra in there. There's actually two, and sleep on his couch. So that was my plan, to maybe sleep from 6:30 to 11, because I still have to move my car, because that's not bad. I'll be well rested for that noon show. But here are the two flies in the ointment here. One, my wife is very, very frustrated at how long my hair is. And I'll be honest, I've been looking at how long my hair is, and it's too long. It's too long. I am in dire need of a haircut. And my Manhattan barber gets here late. So, I mean, early. So I could, in theory, get a haircut by 7 o'clock. Now, my guy is downtown, so by the time I get down there, I get my haircut, but then I lose some valuable sleeping time. So it's sleep, haircut, sleep, haircut, sleep, haircut. And my decision is made all the more troublesome by the fact that I think they're doing a video feed of our show at noon. Oh, by the way, there's Joe Borelli on Fox News, who beat me in ping pong on Saturday. He's got some nerve. I can see he's got that smug look, like I just beat Frank in ping pong look. He's got some nerve. No tie, no necktie. I think Joe is actually dealing with some of the same issues I am, in that our neck has gotten so large due to being overweight that we can't really put on a necktie comfortably and button that top button without living in perpetual fear that that button's going to pop off. I'll tell you, though, as difficult as we might have a tough time with that top button, I don't think either of us should be trifled with when it comes to ping pong. However, that's what I'm dealing with. So then I get a call from Curtis last night. He's got this big editorial interview with one of the newspaper editorial boards, and he wants to go over questions with me and things that he's going to say before the editorial board. So he said, what time are you off? I said, 6. He said, well, let me call you at 6. So now I have haircut, Curtis, sleep. Those are the three things that I'm trying to muscle. And the difficult thing is, when you have a narrow window of time, in my case, it's about 5 hours, you have to make decisions quickly. So do I run out of here to the haircut place after I move my car? Do I run out of here to Arthur's? Do I stick around here, take the Curtis call? Do I take the Curtis calls? I'm walking to Arthur's. These are the decisions that I'm grappling with. A rough day for the New Jersey football teams yesterday. I thought I was seeing things when I saw the Jets playing in the morning yesterday. Sure enough, the Jets were playing in the land of Martin Foam. They were playing in the United Kingdom. So they played a morning game, which is kind of fun. Doesn't interfere with any of your afternoon activities. They lost miserably. And then the Giants not only got trounced by the Dallas Cowboys, but the quarterback got hurt. Saquon got hurt. So, I mean, as Yogi would say, it's getting late early for the Jets and the Giants at this point. All right, we're going to do 15 seconds of fame in just a little while. And again, if you want to email me, and I want to reiterate, especially to the podcast audience, please, if you want to give a kidney to Sophia, she would really appreciate it, and so would I. So if you're interested in giving away your kidney, email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. I'm telling you, giving away a kidney is, it instantly gives you the moral high ground in any conversation from now on. I have a friend named Danielle. She, you know, she can be a little, you know, she has her moments where she can be tough to take at times. But then again, so can I. But she constantly plays that kidney card. She finds a way in any conversation, whether you're talking about doing chores around the house and her husband are divvying up the chores, whether you're talking about what restaurant to go to, whether you're talking about her daughter's education, she finds a way to play that kidney card in every conversation. And it works for her. Works great. She gets, you know, awards and recognition. People like her more than they ordinarily would. That could be you. You could have the moral high ground anywhere. Just give your kidney away. Email me, seriously, frank.morano at wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. Diane is in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Good morning, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Listen, Frank, didn't you tell us you have a sofa there at the radio station?
Diane,
lay down on?
Excellent question. Excellent question. Here are the reasons, and it's a very comfortable sofa, I must say. But here are the reasons that that will not work. Because if I am sticking around here, one, between 6 and 11 a.m. around here, there's a lot of activity. You have all these people here for the morning show. You have video people here for the morning show. You have people that are training to be video people. So there's all sorts of people running around. Now, at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, it's peaceful and serene. You could see a tumbleweed go by in the hallway. There's nobody around. But at 7 a.m., 8 a.m., forget about it. This place is like Grand Central. Plus, when other people see that I'm here, because, you know, being overnights, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. Other people see that I'm here. They all of a sudden remember things that they need to go over with me. They'll see me and say, oh, Frank, you know, what's happening with what we talked about with this? And then it's not a relaxed 5 hours. It becomes a very high stress 5 hours.
Sorry to hear that, Frank.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate the concern, though, and it's a good question. 800-848-WABC. Bruce is in Nevada. Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Frank. You know, there's many people concerning your friends with the kidney situation. There's many people like that, and there's many people that want to make their decisions for themselves, and the people that are forcing this, mandating this, they've been in this limbo area like the kidney person was talking about. And all these people are trying to stand up for themselves. And there's a lot of people that don't want to stand up for themselves. They're afraid to. There's been a lot of lawsuits being generated over the last several days trying to protect people like this. And these mandates at hospitals are so crushing to people that need health issues of all kinds that are forced to be vaccinated if they choose not to do so. They can't get the procedures that they need. So these few lawyers are stepping up and they're bringing these court cases. And my question is to Frank, do you want to have this settled in the courts? Because that's the way it's going.
Well, no, I don't. I want the hospitals to do the right thing, Bruce.
But it may not happen until they drag these court cases through the courts.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what the alternative then is, Bruce. It's certainly a shame.
I'm not sure either, but there are these lawyers. I guess they're brave. They're stepping out of the box, so to speak, and talking to these people. There's a lot of studies that are starting to back up different forms of thought. There's a study by the Department of Defense about the amount of people that are getting infected. And there's also some information gathered from Medicare and Medicaid through the government. And they're drawing conclusions from that also.
Bruce, thank you. I have to run. We have to break before we do 15 seconds of fame. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. But I will tell you that if you are interested in fighting inflation, you remember when Gerald Ford ran for president, he had the buttons that said, win, whip inflation now. Well, if you want to win, if you want to whip inflation now, you know how you do it? With gold. Gold, silver, and precious metals. Because they retain their value. Do you see the price of cotton? Do you see the price of food? Food is at a 50-year high. So do the right thing. If you want to hedge against inflation, talk to the good folks over at Legacy Precious Metals. If you have an existing retirement account, forget about it. You have to roll that into a gold or a silver IRA, and you should do so with Legacy Precious Metals. And the last time the stock market went haywire back in 2008, the people that were invested in gold, they made a mint. Everybody else saw financial carnage. That's why gold should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased counsel based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today, 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com.
In 1492, three ships sailed out to sea, the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria. And as they sailed the stormy sea on that historic day, from way up in the crow's nest you could hear Luigi say,
"Please, Mr. Columbus, I turn the ship around. Take me back, I want to feel my 2 feet on the ground.
Why you tell Isabella that the world is round?
Please, Mr. Columbus, turn the ship around."
The great Lou Monty. Please, Mr. Columbus, turn this ship around. It is Columbus Day. Please tune in to me at high noon. I'll be in for Charlie Kirk. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, now's the time because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
800-848-9222. Let us begin with Jim on Staten Island. If you think that's his name, boy, do I have the Nina and the Pinta to sell you. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Frank. I just want to know, how does it feel to have someone sneak into your house on Saturday mornings and beat you in ping pong 3 days in a row?
It's as embarrassing as you might think. It's as embarrassing as seeing Joe Borelli not being able to put on a necktie on Fox News. Fred in Brooklyn, hello.
1692. Just because you're awake doesn't mean you have to call into a radio show. Cut it.
Patrick in the Boogie Down Bronx, hello.
We the Janine Machine by Richard Blasberg at Twisted Justice at CNN.com. That's the Janine Machine by Richard Blasberg at Twisted Justice at CNN.com. Janine Pirro is an Arab criminal and a fraud who sent an innocent New York City cop to prison.
Frankie in Glendale, hello.
I come to get the daffodil. Out on a limb so thin, I tumble down like Jack and Jill and skinned my little shin.
Eddie in New Haven.
Hey, my friend died waiting for a kidney transplant in New Haven at Yale New Haven Hospital. I want to send Sophie a can of kidney beans because that's what she's going to get.
Joan in Randolph.
Our son-in-law is waiting 5 years for a kidney. He has twin boys, and it's very hard on the family. We would love a kidney transplant.
I'm going to put you on hold, Joan. Give Ryan your information. If we get a surplus of kidneys, we'll give your son-in-law one, too. Mikey in Brooklyn, hello.
Well, all I could say is if Isabella took care of Christopher Columbus, he must have been some lover, man. Three ships and a crew and everything, food. Who was better than him?
Anthony in Edison.
Yes, good morning. We need Zach Chinarelli for governor in New Jersey, and we need Curtis Sliwa for mayor in New York. De Blasio's policy sucked. We can't have a governor that is anti-police. We got to have police. I mean, what about criminal reform instead of police reform?
800-848-9222. Neil is on Staten Island.
Anybody who's on dialysis, who's waiting for a kidney, and doesn't want to get it because, not of religious reasons, because they're not sure of it, needs a psychiatrist, not a kidney.
800-848-WABC, Mike in West Palm Beach.
Top of the morning, Frank. Always a good show. Happy Columbus Day to you, Frank Russo, all the good Italians, and Matt. Also, I'm making sausage and peppers with fresh Italian bread. Nothing like it. And what is Sidney Rosenbaum or Rosenberg?
Thank you, Mike. You may not know it, but Matt is actually 75% Italian. We learned that on Friday. Ted is in Forest Hills. Hello, Ted.
Hi. Thank you. Evidently, some people believe in flying saucers, and other people believe that the vaccine is made from fetus parts. God bless you. God is blessed.
Thank you, Ted. All right. Well, that slams the lid on things for today. I am flying solo for the next hour. Juliet is off today. She's sick. Hopefully she's back tomorrow. She's feeling a little under the weather, but she doesn't have COVID. She went and got a COVID test, so she is COVID free. I don't know. You know, maybe it was something she ate. I don't know what the specifics of her ailment are, but hopefully she's back tomorrow. But you should still listen to me. We have the sports with Matt Sapienza. We have news with Deb Valentine. We have a lot of other great stuff, and it's all right here on the 77 WABC Early News. Now, you're going to want to come back. You want to listen the whole day, Bernie and Sid, Brian Kilmeade, but you're going to want to listen to me at noon. I'm going to be broadcasting live from the Columbus Day Parade, either with sleep or a haircut. Either way, it's worth listening to and watching. This has been a lot of fun. My thanks to Ryan for his assistance today. My thanks to Matt and Molly, as always, for their assistance. The WABC Early News is next, to be continued.